And there are relatively few employees who provide that many number of years of public service. Joe and I have worked together for a long time, I think about 22 years. It feels like a long time to me, and he's been here a good decade longer. He was first hired in 1983 as a draftsman, and his job back then, I believe, was called an engineering technician 2. We don't have that job anymore. And he rolled with the times and grew professionally and worked as a project manager and managed dozens and dozens of projects. So you see the capital improvement plan come through every year. You see lots of projects. Sometimes they go well, sometimes they don't go well. Joe managed a lot of projects, and you didn't see him very much, mostly because his projects just went along just fine. Of note, in recent years, he worked on, I think, most of the North Douglas sewer projects, most of the West Valley sewer projects, the Eagles Edge water project. He worked on the award-winning Calhoun Avenue reconstruction. You remember that? That was 20 years ago. His quiet demeanor and patience has served the city well, its citizens, and himself. He's going to go on to enjoy his retirement, and I hope he...
Joining the meeting. Mm-hmm. Debbie White.
Hi, Debbie. We're doing employee recognition. I hope he goes on to catch even more fish, although in the last few years I'm wondering about the catch rate. A little worried about that.
Drop off.
And we'll be putting an end date on the plaque outside. So I don't have anything further to say, but I've really enjoyed working with Joe, and I thank him greatly for his 32.4 years of public service.
As a city, Joe, I'd like to present you with this certificate from the City and Borough of Juneau for Joe Castillo. It's recognized for 32 years of dedicated service to the City and Borough of Juneau, dated November 9th, 2015, signed by myself. I'm very proud to present this to you. Thank you for your service. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I guess we forgot the point four on there.
I've been sneezing, so I'm not going to shake hands, but thank you very much.
Okay.
I don't want you to say
it.
Thank you. Enjoy your retirement.
I will.
Thank you very much.
Wow, thank you.
It's awesome.
Enjoy your retirement.
Thank you. I intend to.
I am too.
So our next order of business then is approval of prior meeting minutes. First of all, for October 2015 regular meeting, 2015-26. I have a motion to approve. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move we approve the October 20th regular meeting minutes. And ask the unanimous consent.
Hearing no objection, those are adopted. Next is October 21st, 2015 special meeting number 2015-27.
Wait, sorry. I did have some changes I would like to see in the minutes.
Of the
October. There was...
October 20th, is that?
October the 20th, yes, meeting minutes.
Okay.
And if you look at page 10 of 65, the motion by Crane to introduce the ordinance and refer the matter to CDD, following discussion and hearing no objection, it was so ordered. I asked the clerk, I thought that the minutes should reflect the reasons why I asked to have that removed from the agenda. I think it was important to note it in the minutes that my point that we are treating neighborhoods differently in the borough, and that this has been an issue before, it's before us again, and that we need to look at this. And so I wanted the minutes to reflect that discussion.
Can you make those adjustments with
page 10
in your red folder? There's a revision of the minutes, and I sent it out by email today for people to look at.
I don't believe I got it read. Can you take a quick look at those, Ms. Payne, and see if they meet?
I've already read them, and they would be fine.
Okay. So is there any objection to the adoption of the minutes as amended? Hearing none, the minutes are adopted. Which then brings us to item B, which is October 21st, 2015, special meeting minutes for number 2015-27. Do I hear a motion to adopt those minutes of the special meeting? Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. I move we adopt the minutes, special assembly meeting minutes of October 21st and ask for unanimous consent.
Hearing no objection, those are adopted. Next item of business is manager's request for agenda changes. Madam Manager.
Yes, thank you. I want to draw your attention to the red folder again, and in it you will see the 2016 CBJ assembly meeting calendar. There's a revised one from what was in the original packet. On the right corner it says revised draft 11-9-2015. That will be coming up later in the meeting, and I can let you know what the change is on that calendar.
Okay, thank you. No other changes?
No, thank you.
Okay. It brings us to public participation on non-agenda items. We had a number of people sign up to testify tonight, but most of the testimony signed up for is not on non-agenda items. So we have four people who are calling to testify on a non-agenda item. The first one would be Ruth Baumgartner. Ruth, are you? Please state your name and address for the record.
Hi, my name is Ruth Baumgartner, 11027 Mendenhall Loop Road. And I'm coming before you with a concern to address the compliance and enforcement of a conditional use permit. I'm a neighbor whose property is adjacent to a commercial business that was granted a conditional use permit with conditions on February 11, 2014. Attached, which you guys should have in front of you, is a table of communications I've had with the Community Development Department since July of 2014. In addition, I've included a list of the compliance issues that are either within the project plan and description or conditions set forth in the permit. The business has been running since the summer of 2014 without completing the requirements of the conditional use permit, which includes the project plan and project description. From the date the conditional use permit was issued until the present, the Community Development Department has failed to do its job and to ensure that the business was operating in accordance with city ordinance, the project description and project plan and conditions of the permit. This business has been allowed to run illegally in 2014 and 2015 and given ample opportunity to meet the conditions of the permit, as well as the project plan and description. What has the CDD done to ensure compliance? Given the business time and time again, without following up on any of the issues unless I placed a phone call or sent an email requesting that they follow up on it. As a member of this community, it is very disheartening to me that the CDD fails to follow ordinance repeatedly, as well as give preferential treatment and deference to a cup holder. Why do I have to enlighten the CDD to the issues of non-compliance? Why does the Community Development Department not inspect a property in accordance with the project plan and project description, as well as the conditions, and not allow them to run their business until they have met the conditions, as well as the project plan and project description? Why is the permit holder given such a latitude in deciding what, when, and how they will do the things that they have set forth in their project description and project plan, as well as the conditions that the Planning Commission permitted the permit with. Why does the city have ordinances if they are not followed? Why does the city have a conditional use permit if it's not enforced? Since 2014, this conditional use permit has been, the business has been allowed to run without having compliance with the conditional use permit. To me, that's not acceptable in a city where I'm living, especially with the business right next door to me. There should be a process in place where the Community Development Department has to follow through with the conditional use permit and ensure that it's meeting the conditions as well as the project plan and description before that business is allowed to run. If it's not following those things, it should be not allowed to run, and nobody has done anything. Yet they're probably providing tax money to the city because they've been selling things. It's just not okay. And our neighborhood has fought hard through this. We're going to continue to fight hard to receive the treatment that we should receive and not give the preferential treatment to the cup holder. There's no reason for that. There's conditions set forth. There are ordinances that should be followed, yet the Community Development Department continues not to enforce what's put forth in the notice of decision with this permit. Thank you for your time tonight. I would hope that we look further into how to better enforce the conditional use permit. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Baumgartner? Thank you for your testimony. The next person who signed up to testify is testifying about the Juneau Ocean Center, Mr. Paul Volkers. You have 5 minutes to testify. Please identify yourself and your address, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Paul Volkers. I live at 1760 Capitol View Court in Douglas. And I'll just have a few brief points. Actually, there's three of us tonight. I'm going to talk a little bit about the progress of the design and organization of the project itself. Linda Nicklin's going to talk a bit more about some of our program and outreach connections we're making. And Carlton is going to talk a little bit representing the Alaska Mental Health Trust Board. And people may not realize that the Mental Health Trust manages the property, the Subport property, and a number of other properties in that greater Willoughby-Whittier district. And in total, they manage like 1 million acres in the state, and I think 250,000 or something in Southeast. And we're fortunate to have two board members, you know, Carlton and Lorraine Durr, representing Southeast. So it's a very nice relationship. But what I want to talk on real briefly is we've continued to make progress since we last talked to you on putting together a legal entity, an LLC nonprofit, similar to, say, the Housing First project, where we could, assuming there is something to talk about here, that we have a legal entity that could help partner with the city on their interests. The other thing we've been doing is making continuing plan improvements, and one of the issues that we hope to be conversing about with the Mental Health Trust is putting a right-of-way through their property. This has been discussed loosely a couple years ago.
Joining the meeting.
And maybe
Debbie White.
Hi, Debbie. And anyway, we're illustrating some improvements to the plan that you achieve by having a right-of-way that goes through the Mental Health Trust land. Suddenly, you're not trying to loop on and off Egan. You're coming back through a controlled intersection at Whittier. It also frees up a lot of environmental and sort of design advantages along the waterfront. So we're underway with improved graphics to try to make that case as well. So with that, maybe I'll turn it over to Ms. Nicklin.
Unless there's questions.
Questions for Mr. Volkers. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. I'm Linda Nicklin. I live at 12175 Glacier Highway, number E401. Appreciate the opportunity to address you again regarding the Juneau Ocean Center. I won't reprise any of our earlier presentation to this body, but tonight I'd simply like to tell you about just two of the connections that we've made in the weeks since we last spoke with you. One was a conversation with Jim and Beth Kurtula. Ms. Kurtula, as you may know, is currently director of the National Ocean Council, and she responded with great enthusiasm to our description of the Ocean Center project and said she is optimistic about the potential for linkages with federal programs and currently available federal funding for the Ocean Center. The second was a conversation with Chancellor Caulfield at UAS. We talked about ways that the Juneau Ocean Center programs can intersect with UAS's current initiative to strengthen themselves as a destination for the study of marine sciences. We talked about program possibilities, and he offered to help identify and encourage a science advisory board from amongst UAS faculty to provide input on Juneau Ocean Center programs as we move forward. So I'm asking for your support as a body tonight so that we can continue to develop and strengthen positive connections such as these in creating the Juneau Ocean Center, where community and science connect to create positive actions supporting healthy oceans. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from Ms. Nicklin? Thank you. Carlton?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the Assembly, it's pretty nice to be back in this room for the first time in a long time. I just want to say that the trustees of the Mental Health Trust want to add value to our property here in Juneau. And that's in addition to the million acres of land that we manage statewide, in addition to the $1 billion in assets that we manage for the beneficiaries of the trust. We're very sensitive to community goals. And when I say that, you know, in Southeast Alaska, a quarter of a million acres of land that we're responsible for, we have to answer to the people of Haines, Juneau, Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan. We're very sensitive to the goals of all of our Southeast communities. We've facilitated some of the initial discussions with the Trust Land Office with regard to the interest in this site in connection with the location of the whale and the potential of this other project. However, the trustees have not been directly involved at this stage of the game in weighing in on the oceans project. I just want you to know that we are committed, and I say this as an individual trustee, we're committed to see that the interests of Juneau are transmitted to the trust. And this coming week, I will be in Anchorage and I will communicate some of the specifics of this project and the interest in this project to the Trust Land Office. And I thank you for your interest.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Smith?
Thank you.
Thank you. I believe that we'll end the public testimony on non-agenda items, but I'll just ask if there's anybody who has signed up for something other than tax abatements, marijuana, or gas snow apartments. Who wants to testify?
Both non-agenda and agenda items.
Please address the non-agenda item. Please state your name and address for the record, please.
Russ McDougall, and I'm at 3139 Wilma Avenue, Valley. The non-agenda item I wanted to address is more informational for the Assembly, but also for the audience, and that is that I sit on the Affordable Housing Commission, as well as several other boards. But the thing I really wanted to let everybody know about and to watch for is the Housing Action Plan that the Affordable Housing Commission has in the works. I believe the head presenter from the consulting firm that we hired came in last month, 2 weeks ago. And there were a number of questions from the Assembly members that they didn't feel that it was really complete or really what they wanted. And so we've gone and had more discussion with the consultant, and they've agreed to do additional work and come out with a better final product in that Housing Action Plan. And so I'm excited about that, and I hope you are too. We want to polish it so when it goes out to the general public, they can read a document that makes sense and hopefully will help our community, and a guide that can be added to the composition, a comprehensive plan, and that we can use as an important tool for development here. So that's really all I have. If there's questions, I'd be happy to
answer. Thank you very much. Any questions? Mr. Jones.
Thank you. At the Planning Commission, I reported that the consultant had talked I thought at that time it would go to the Planning Commission. I was corrected by staff that you guys would be holding some public hearings first.
That's true.
Prior to it going to the Planning Commission. Then it'll go through a review of the Planning Commission before it comes back to us. So do you know when those public hearings will be?
Yes, in our last board meeting, we talked about having a final draft from the consultant the first part of December, and we discussed that if it goes out for public comment in the holiday season, we think that it should have 60 days of public comment. So I'm not sure how that fits in with the Assembly and the Planning Commission review, but we would like to see that, especially if it comes out during the holidays, that maybe we have a 60-day review period, but that's not too much to ask.
Okay, thank you.
You hit on one other important thing there, and I'm trying to think back a little bit. You know, I think this is just a very important document, and I want to see as many people in the audience and the public taking a look at it, too.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
So we'll close public participation on non-agenda items with that, which brings us to the consent agenda. Are there any public requests for consent agenda changes, anything to be removed other than an ordinance for introduction? Seeing none, are there any assembly requests for consent agenda changes? Assembly action.
Pardon? I can make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
Did you ask unanimous consent?
Oh, yes, asking for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, then the consent agenda is adopted. Which brings us to ordinances for public hearing. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 2015-39, an ordinance amending the land use code relating to marijuana establishments.
Ready?
Madam Manager.
This ordinance would amend CBJ Title 49, the Land Use Code, as it relates to marijuana establishments by adding four new uses to the table of permissible uses: marijuana cultivation, marijuana production manufacturing, marijuana product manufacturing, marijuana testing, and marijuana retail. After a number of meetings and discussion, the Marijuana Committee forwarded to the Planning Commission a draft ordinance providing for the addition of marijuana establishments to the table of permissible uses. The Planning Commission's Title 49 subcommittee reviewed the Marijuana Committee's recommendations and forwarded a revised version of the ordinance to the Planning Commission for its consideration. The amended draft ordinance was heard before the Planning Commission on September 8, 2015, but failed to pass. The proposed ordinance was heard again on September 22, 2015, at which time the Planning Commission approved forwarding the ordinance with the Commission's revisions to the Assemblies for its approval. The Assembly took public comment and considered the ordinance at its October 26, 2015 meeting, Committee of the Whole. The ordinance was forwarded without change to tonight's public hearing. Included in the packet of information for this meeting is a draft of the ordinance showing the changes in italics the Planning Commission made to the proposal forwarded by the Marijuana Committee. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. The number of people who signed up to testify on marijuana issues, I presume it's in relationship to this particular ordinance. So the first person is Zan Oliphant.
Hey, I'm Zan Oliphant, class of 85, JDHS, coming back to grow some pot here. I have a cannabis farm in Washington right now. I'm just introducing myself. It's an incredibly complicated topic that I can't even begin to have a discussion. So, hi, nice to meet you. Any questions? Feel free.
Are there any questions for Mr. Oliphant? Thank you, sir, for your testimony.
Thanks.
The next person signed up on marijuana issues, I believe, is Margot Waring. Ms. Waring.
I'm Margo Waring. I live at 11380 North Douglas Highway, Juneau. I have written to both the Planning Commission a number of times and also to the Assembly and was not here for your last meeting on this topic. I want to make a number of points about the proposed change in the code regarding marijuana cultivation, processing, testing, and sales. The first point I'd like to make is that to me, the reason we have zoning is to be clear about separating residential uses from industrial uses, separating commercial from residential uses. And what I see the Planning Commission doing and what I see the Assembly considering is allowing the introduction into D1 and rural reserve areas of activities that have that are commercial and industrial and retail that have never been permitted before. And I think that's a mistake. I think that we will all come to regret it, not only because of this subject, but because of the example it sets for other possible activities. I think that we have to remember that marijuana cultivation and processing are industrial activities. We're not looking at your backyard raised veggie bed. This is an indoor industrial activity, and the pictures I've seen, and perhaps we can have further comment on it, but the pictures I've seen when I go to the web are of large metal buildings with chain link fences and 24-hour lights where people deal in big exhaust fans and temperature-controlled environments and so forth and so on. This is a commercial and industrial activity and, in my opinion, inconsistent with D1 and the residential areas in rural reserve. Further, I think allowing the sale of marijuana in rural reserve areas is a big mistake. None of you would support having packaged liquor stores out in D1 neighborhoods or in rural reserve. It invites people to use a product while driving that most likely none of us want to see used while driving. We wouldn't want people to be going out to Randall Road or somewhere and driving back with liquor bottles. And I think it's the same kind of thing. I just think it's a big mistake to allow sales in rural areas. I'd also like to comment on the point that Ms. Crane raised regarding the way in which the treatment of D1 and the residential areas in the rural reserve are unequal, but not for any particularly good reason. The land use mapping has failed to keep up with the fact that thousands of people live in the rural reserve area under circumstances exactly the same as D1, but who are not afforded the same protection as D1. I think this is something that really requires attention and remediation by the Planning Commission. Again, I urge you to reconsider allowing cultivation, processing, and sales in D1 and in the rural reserve residential areas. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for Ms. Waring? Thank you.
No.
So that brings us to assembly action. There's nobody else to testify, I believe. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we remove in section 5 under D1, the marijuana cultivation, and remove that from that section. It is true that these are residential areas, even though they're outside the urban service area. And when I think what Ms. Waring just said about all the lights, I think of how much trouble we went through for the tower on lights, and that was further away than this might be to neighbors. I just think we're opening up another big light can of worms, and it's not necessary. And I move that we remove it.
Is there a second?
Just a quick point of order. Do we
need I object to that.
Do we need the ordinance before us before we start taking
amendments? Yeah.
Amendments.
I believe the ordinance was read.
So
right, but it needs to be moved.
So, Mr. Mayor, if I may, I'll move ordinance 2015-39 for adoption.
Okay.
I won't bother asking for unanimous consent because I think Ms. Becker has an amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Keel.
So you had a motion and an objection.
We have an objection. So further comment? Ms. Gladyszewski?
I just want to clarify what the motion is.
Please. The motion is to adopt.
No. She had an amendment. Ms. Becker had an amendment. No?
Yes, Ms. Becker has an
amendment. And I object to the amendment. Okay, and I'd like to speak to that when I can.
Go ahead, Ms. White.
Could we understand what the amendment is?
Well, I don't think, just point of order, I don't think there wasn't a motion before us, improperly my fault, when Ms. Becker made her suggestion. So I believe we'd need her to restate that as an amendment to the ordinance. Are you doing that?
Yes. Sounds
okay.
Fine.
So we have, and I believe we have an objection to that from Ms. White.
I'm going to restate my amendment.
Okay.
Thank you. So, an motion on the floor to adopt this ordinance, and I move an amendment. And it is in section 5, page 2, marijuana cultivation, remove the D1 category. And I have another amendment, but I have four more amendments. However, I don't
one
think
at
you
a time.
Want to do them all at one time.
Okay. So. Ms. White, would you like to speak to your objection?
Okay. Yes, I would. I would like to say that the entire purpose of the table of permissible uses is to regulate how things are handled in different neighborhoods. We can address the light issue. We can address the smell issue. We can do it separately. But the fact is that we use the table of permissible uses for child care centers, whether or not people can have apartments, differences in setbacks, whether or not they can have farm animals and how many and how far from the property line they need to be. It has to do with density, whether or not you can have a dog kennel, water bottling, funeral homes. That is the entire purpose. And the fact is that initiative that legalized marijuana is to bring it out into the public, and the fact is that then we get to tax the sales. And if you think that cultivation is not already happening in residential areas, the fact is it already is there. If we drive this industry back underground, it defeats the entire purpose of the voter initiative.
Thank you. Are there any other comments on the amendment? Mr. Keel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would just note that when we look at section 14.2 of the table of permissible uses, in the D1 zone, we do allow commercial agricultural operations. We allow commercial agricultural operations both with and without farm animals. And so when we talk about compatible uses, I think it's worth remembering that we're talking about lots of of an acre, well, I shouldn't say lots of an acre, more, no more than one dwelling unit an acre. So we have our least dense residential zone here. And so there's an opportunity through the conditional use permit, which would be required here, to buffer from neighbors, to mitigate the effect of lights. We have a history of some good and thoughtful work by the Planning Commission to mitigate impacts on the neighbors. But as Ms. White said, to allow this industry to begin and to succeed in Juneau. And so I will encourage everyone to vote no on the amendment.
Ms. Crane.
I would say that growing tomatoes is different than growing marijuana. And we heard from an earlier testifier how well we're doing monitoring conditional use permits and making sure that they're being followed. So, you know, just because you already allow certain things in D1 districts, and there are neighborhoods in D1 districts that are more populated than one house per acre, all through the D1. So we're not growing tomatoes here or peonies here. We're growing something else. And what we're growing is what I'm objecting to in a neighborhood. I'm not objecting to growing marijuana. I am objecting to growing it in a neighborhood and treating neighborhoods disparately in the community.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just looking down again to be consistent, what's consistent allowed in what zones? So looking in the section of the table of permissible uses 14 called aquaculture, aviculture, civil culture, mining, quarrying operations, spring water bottling. All those things are in that same section. If you look down the list for D1, things allowed in D1 include civil culture and timber harvesting, mining operations, sand and gravel operations, spring water bottling, stabling of farm animals. So it's not about whether it's tomatoes or marijuana. It's about what is the impact of the operation, and that is what the conditional use process is for. I wouldn't want lights and noise and fans in my neighborhood either, and that's why it's a three. It means you get a conditional use and you see what is compatible in that location or not. So I would just say it is treating neighborhoods the same by all those things that are already allowed in D1.
Ms. Troll.
Thank you. I thought a fair amount about this, and what I had to come back to was going through the Planning Commission minutes, and one of the things that stood out to me was the number one lesson from Washington State and Colorado was to keep marijuana cultivation out of residential areas. You know, there are states that have a viable industry. I want a viable industry here. I'm just trying to figure out the balance of making sure we provide enough space for it to succeed, and at the same time, learn from those other states and take a little bit of a cautionary approach. And we can always add in a zone later if we need to on D1. And I think starting off, we owe it to treat all of our residential districts the same. So I will be voting in support of this amendment.
Are there any other comments?
Just briefly.
Mr. Keel.
Just briefly to respond, I guess, to Ms. Crane's point. This isn't growing tomatoes. Tomatoes or peonies you can grow in the open air, which will be illegal with marijuana. So you don't have the concerns about smell and fertilizer spray and runoff onto your property and some of the things that are coming up here. But the other thing is that it's important to note that in this proposed line, there's a little AB next to the three, next to the conditional use permit. And it would limit these uses to only outside the urban service boundary. Now, I haven't gone through and counted, but I don't think most of our D1 outside the urban service boundary does have a particularly high density within D1 zones. So what we have is really an opportunity, especially for the small growers who want to create a boutique product or a relatively limited product but want to get into the industry, to do so in possibly a garage or possibly an outbuilding, and for the Planning Commission to look case by case at these applications. Your point's well taken, and the point of the testifier earlier in the night, that we have not had the best record with our conditional use permits. There are other tools available to us with regard to the marijuana industry, and I know that the Marijuana Policy Committee is talking over the question of a local license, which would be, I think, more efficient and easier to enforce these conditions than our conditional use permit process. So that will come to the Assembly as well. But I think given our limited land base and our very high land costs in Juneau, to make this possible outside the urban service boundary in these D1 districts is probably the wisest course.
Further comment, Assembly members? And would the clerk please call the roll and restate the amendment? The amendment is to remove marijuana cultivation?
Yes.
In D1.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Bartoszewski?
No.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
No.
Mayor Fisk?
No.
Motion fails 4A, 4-nay.
Brings us back to the main motion to adopt.
Have an amendment to make?
Ms. Crane?
I would make a motion to allow only limited marijuana cultivation facilities defined as cultivation facilities with fewer than 500 square feet under cultivation in D1 areas.
Is there objection to the motion, to the amendment?
Can I hear it one more time, ma'am?
The motion would be to allow only limited marijuana cultivation facilities defined as cultivation facilities with fewer than 500 square feet under cultivation in D1 areas.
Is there objection to the motion? Ms. Gladyszewska.
I object. May I ask 500 square feet, how big that is and what
not
you mean?
The size of a garage. You would not have a very large commercial facility then in a D1 neighborhood.
Was that an objection or just a question for clarification?
I'm thinking.
Mr. Jones,
just a point of clarification. Under the current ordinance, under marijuana cultivation, it says AB, which I believe defines that as outside the urban service area. Would your amendment continue the AB, or would that strictly be D1, any place there's D1? So D1 would be in the urban service boundaries and outside the urban service boundaries or not?
It lines 14, 240, and 19, 230 would be amended by adding a notation that applies to facilities of 500 square feet or more and by removing the 3AB in D1 areas.
Ms. Blaszewski.
May I again ask the maker of the motion, can we have, if there were two separate lines, I think it would be clear, marijuana cultivation below X and have its own line, or are you asking for an extra special note just on the D1?
Just on the D1. Ms. Mead?
Ms. Crane asked me about this amendment earlier, and my thought about the easiest way to go about it would be to separate the standard cultivation facilities from the limited cultivation facilities and then add a definition that tracks the state, the proposed state regulation, how they define square feet under cultivation. So there would be a new line for limited or marijuana cultivation facilities with cultivation fewer than 500 square feet under cultivation. And that would be as Ms. Crane described, and then the line above it would be as it currently exists in the proposed ordinance without the D1 designation.
So may I just clarify? So then there would be two lines?
Yes. Section 5 and Section 6 would be amended in the same way.
And the state defines, has a 500-square-foot threshold but for something?
That's how they define a limited marijuana cultivation facility, and a square feet under cultivation is the area of the premises that's used for growing, measured from the perimeter of the floor or growing space for marijuana. It does not include processing or storage areas, equipment storage areas, offices, hallways, or any other area that is not used for growing it. It's only for the growing area.
So we have a motion to amend. Is there any objection to the amendment?
Further clarification.
Okay, Mr. Gale.
I just want to make sure that I've tracked, Ms. Crane, your answer to Mr. Jones. So in both Section 5 and Section 6, what we create a new line. So full size, more than 500 feet of marijuana cultivation would not be permitted in D1 anywhere in the borough. Limited cultivation, 500 square feet or fewer, I think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Fewer than 500 square feet would be permitted in D1 outside the urban service boundary, but not inside the urban service boundary. Am I understanding your motion?
It's not permitted now in D1 inside the urban service area. So we're not changing that. We're just looking at outside.
Thank you.
Is there objection to the amendment? Hearing no objection, the amendment is adopted. It brings us back to the main motion from Mr. Keel. Ms. Kladyshevsky.
I'd like to make an amendment regarding Section 1 about marijuana retail store. The Planning Commission added it allowed in the rural reserve. I too don't really understand that. If you look in the retail section, there's nothing else in rural reserve in retail except for marine merchandise and equipment. So I would move that we take that out, that we take retail out of rural reserve.
Is there any objection to the amendment?
I object.
Mr. Keel, want to speak to your objection?
My memory may be failing me a little bit. While not in the retail section, you can still do restaurants in rural reserve. You can still do bars in rural reserve. You can sell boats, you can sell gas, you can, try to remember if there's anything else you can sell in rural reserve. Certainly you can sell a lot of services, veterinary services and dog grooming and, so I'm just trying to get at why a bar in rural reserve is fine and a marijuana retailer in rural reserve would be something we'd need to zone away. Can you help me?
Mr. Keel, now that you bring that up about the bars and the other restaurants, I know I can't.
Thank you.
So I take it back. But I did want to, I meant to do another thing.
We have.
I withdraw my motion.
You're withdrawing your motion.
I'd like to make.
I'll make them.
Ms. Kladyshevsky has withdrawn her motion, but the same motion is now made by Ms. Crane.
That's correct.
Is there objection to the motion to amend.
I will maintain the objection.
Mr. Keel maintains his objection. Are there any further comments by assembly members? Would the clerk please call the roll on the motion to amend marijuana retail stores in rural reserve?
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
No.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mayor Fisk?
No.
Motion fails 4-4.
Brings us back to the main motion. Are there any further amendments to the main motion? Ms. Gladyszewski, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Sorry for the last one. I wanted to add back into marijuana retail in waterfront industrial. That is the side of the street that the marijuana policy committee recommended that it be in, and the planning commission took it out. And that basically encompasses the side of the South Franklin that is on the water side of the street. If you look on these maps that we were given, there is not a lot of space downtown left for marijuana retail, and I believe there will be I think it's an appropriate use retail in that zone.
Is there objection to the amendment?
I object.
Mr. Jones, you want to speak to your objection?
Yeah, I'm trying to find out. I'm trying to look at the maps, and I see the green, and I know it talks about waterfront commercial. I don't see waterfront industrial listed, at least on the map that I see. And if somebody can point me to the right one, that would be helpful. But I don't see it under the map that shows retail stores. It lists general commercial, light commercial, industrial, mixed use two, and waterfront commercial. Now, maybe that's because waterfront industrial wasn't listed, but I don't see anything on the waterfront that isn't green. So I think the only waterfront industrial that we have downtown is owned by the city, right? Out by the dump or out by the... Well, this map is not very conclusive for me. So,
no, there is, just for clarification, there is privately owned waterfront industrial South Franklin Street.
Yeah.
Ms. Gladyszewski, did you want to clarify your motion?
We don't have the proper maps, actually. We need the zoning maps to show that this is, all the zones are consolidated in the map that's in front of us.
Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At our committee of the whole, I asked for a map that did show the waterfront industrial, and I thought I brought it with me.
I did.
It's not in my folder. So, but I can confirm that when we go down to South Franklin, all the jewelry stores and all those areas that are on the water side, that's waterfront industrial. So if we can have a lot of jewelry stores in this zone, I don't necessarily see the need to restrict marijuana retail stores.
For clarification, I believe that retail map, page 1 of 2, does illustrate South Franklin area, which is currently, under the recommendation from the Planning Commission, excluded from marijuana retail. Is that correct, Mr. Keel? Is that your interpretation?
It is, Mr. Mayor, and just looking at the zoning map I pull up on my tablet, it looks to me like waterfront industrial begins roughly just south of the tram terminal and continues on down through the Rockland.
That's correct.
So if I might, so basically what you're talking about is Fisherman's Memorial, Twisted Fish, Taku Smokeries, the docks that don't operate in the wintertime, and then you're talking about the rock dump.
And that
you're not talking about the jewelry stores. You're not talking about
the miners.
Excuse me, point of order. I think the clarification is there's both waterfront industrial and waterfront commercial that's at stake here in this amendment. And there is waterfront commercial there that from this map would be excluded
The motion was to add back in to waterfront industrial, but waterfront commercial is already there.
Right.
Doesn't appear so in this map. Ms. Kladoszewski?
On the ordinance, Mr. Mayor.
My understanding is the miners mercantile is waterfront industrial. Is that correct? That's land I'm talking about.
Correct.
Waterfront commercial already is in here.
Correct. Mm-hmm. You're correct.
And the only point is there's a very limited space for this retail, especially taking the buffers out and restricting it even more will just make it harder for those businesses to find a place to operate.
Okay.
That's all.
So the amendment is to add waterfront industrial back into, you know, to list of permissible zones here. Are you still objecting?
Yes.
Mr. Jones? Is there further comment? And clerk, please call the roll on this amendment.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Kladoszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankert? Sorry. Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Crane?
No.
Mayor Fisk?
Yes.
Motion carried.
One more.
Brings us back to the main motion. Do you have another amendment?
I do.
Ms. Crane?
It's the last one. Motion to amend 2015-39 to prohibit marijuana processing facilities within 1,000 feet of recognized neighborhood associations in the rural reserve area. This is the same thing that we did with cell towers to protect neighborhoods in the rural reserve, and this offers then some limited protection for those neighborhoods in the rural reserve. So, again, the motion is to prohibit marijuana processing facilities within 1,000 feet of recognized neighborhood associations in the rural reserve. And there is precedence for this. This is what we did with the cell tower amendments.
Is there objection to the amendment? Ms. Kladoszewski?
Just a question. I wasn't here when you did the neighborhood. What does it mean, 1,000 feet to a neighborhood association? Do you have a map of neighborhood associations?
There has to be an established neighborhood association, and if there is, and it's on record with the clerk's office, then so it has to be an established, you have to go through a process to establish a neighborhood association. It's not a process, but you have to go through a process.
Further comment on the amendment? Mr. Jones?
I'll
go ahead, Mr. Jones, and we'll come back to you, Ms. White.
Mm-hmm.
I just need some clarification because the wording that I heard Ms. Crane use, I can't find in the ordinance. So are we like amending page 2, line 15?
What this would do is amend section 7 to add a new footnote AC to the table of permissible uses. And it would amend section 4 to add that new footnote, to line 4.220, marijuana product manufacturing facilities in rural reserve areas.
Okay, that's very helpful then. Thank you, because that wasn't clear.
Ms. White?
I would have a question for Ms. Mead about definition of recognized neighborhood associations, and does that mean that they have minutes that are public, and does that mean they have regular meetings? How do they become a recognized? I mean, can anybody who's a member of said organization write a letter on their behalf? Or, I mean, I just need more information on that.
Ms. Mead?
Neighborhood associations are provided for in Chapter 11.35. It's done by submitting an application to the clerk along with the neighborhood association bylaws outlining the geographic area of the association and listing the members of the association.
Does there, if I may continue, does there need to be a certain percentage of residents within that area be signed up as members or something? Because I just remember the city getting a letter on behalf of a neighborhood association for a neighborhood I lived in, but I didn't know I was a member of said association, and all of a sudden somebody's writing letters on my behalf that I didn't agree with.
No.
I mean, is that going to happen? I mean, does somebody just say, oh, we have a neighborhood association from, you know, the 3,200 block to the 3,500 block of such and such a street, or?
Ms. Mead?
If the assembly wished to make the application requirements more stringent, we could amend 11.35, but right now it would allow some of the neighbors or all of the neighbors to form a neighborhood association.
I have a question and clarification here, too. Is there not a neighborhood association, the Douglas Neighborhood Association, which effectively comprises the entirety of Douglas Island?
I have no
defined?
Idea.
There is a North Douglas one.
There is a Douglas Advisory Commission, not a neighborhood association.
Okay. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Just to clarify, there is a North Douglas Neighborhood Association encompassing the entire north of the bridge.
There is a Thane Neighborhood Association.
Thane Neighborhood Association.
Okay. Any further comments?
So can
Ms. White?
Well, I guess I'm just trying to say, does that mean that any person who lives in that neighborhood can write a letter saying it's on behalf of the neighborhood association, or does everybody else, is there some sort of vote to back it up, or is it just sort of random? I guess without some sort of solid information, I would definitely object to this.
Actually, the way that it works would be the same way it works for cell towers. And if there is an established neighborhood association on record with the clerk's office, because that's where they register, then one of these establishments would not be allowed within certain number of feet to that neighborhood association as defined in the application.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. May I just ask a question? Are there any place in the borough that is not encompassed by that? In other words, it seems to me like if you did this, you would be basically taking it out of rural reserve, or you would be taking it out of most of the borough.
I'm not aware. When we did the cell towers, my understanding was that there were not a large number of neighborhood associations on file with the clerk's office.
Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question to the maker of the amendment, and just wondering why the 1,000-foot as opposed to the 500-foot standard, which is the buffer that we have in all these other areas?
It's just I'm following what we did for the cell tower amendment. That is the protection that we afforded neighborhood associations there, and so I'm just following that precedent. 500 feet is not very far from a neighborhood association. And so I'm just trying to be consistent with what we've done in the past.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? Would the clerk please call the roll?
Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
No.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mayor Fisk?
No.
Motion carries 5-3.
Which brings us back again to the main motion to adopt the ordinance as amended. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, then the ordinance is adopted as amended. I hope we've got a good record of all our amendments and the lack thereof. Okay, so this brings us item B.
Ordinance 2015-20U, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $427,029 as funding for the 2015 State Homeland Security Program, SHSP, grant funding provided by the State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
These funds are provided to reimburse the City and Borough of Juneau for expenses incurred in direct support of the goals and activities of the State Homeland Security Program. Funding from this program is provided to support, build, and sustain the ability of states, territories, and urban areas to prevent, protect against, mitigate, respond to, and recover from terrorist attacks and other all-hazard events through planning, training, exercise, and equipment procurement within the grant performance period from September 1st, 2015 to September 30th, 2017. We propose to fund purchase and installation of a bi-directional radio application system for the airport and an alerting and communication system for the fire stations, purchase ballistic helmets, body armor, and CBRN negative pressure respirators for the SWAT team, and travel costs, including transportation of the shelters and backfilling of participant costs and travel costs for mid-planning, final planning, and after planning for the Alaska Shields 2016 event. There's no match requirement for this grant. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on this matter? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly for action. Do I hear a motion? Ms. Troll?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2015-20U and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the ordinance is adopted. Item C. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 2015-20B, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $25,000 as funding for portable breath testers, training, and accreditation expenses, funding provided by the Roaded Service Area Fund Balance Asset Forfeiture Reserve.
I believe the title explains what the money will be used for. All the expenses are allowable and appropriate expenses for the JPD Asset Forfeiture Reserve account. The balance currently on the U.S. Justice Asset Forfeiture account is $299,124. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify in this matter? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly for action. Ms. Gladyszewski?
I would move Ordinance 2015-20V and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, that ordinance is adopted. Item D, Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 2015-20W, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $37,789 as funding for the Master Plan Study Capital Improvement Project, funding provided by Juneau International Airport Fund Balance.
Madam Manager.
These funds will cover costs in the Sustainability Master Plan CIP that are not eligible for Federal Aviation Administration grant funds, including engineering consultant contracts and administrative staff time. The Airport Board approved this action at its July 8th and October 7th meetings. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public wish to testify on this matter? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly for action. Do I have a motion? Ms. Crane?
I'll move Ordinance 2015-20W and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, then the ordinance is adopted. This brings us to unfinished business from Docks and Harbors, regulation from Docks and Harbors on recreational and commercial boat launch fees. Do you want to cover this, or do you want to have Mr. Yucatel?
No, I'll cover it. This was before the assembly at the last assembly meeting. There were some questions, and so the recommendation was tabled to tonight's meeting. I assume those questions were answered, and my recommendation is orders of the day.
Okay. Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify in this matter?
Mayor, yes. Bring I up. Move orders of the day.
Is there objection? Those regulations are adopted. Brings us to, I believe, to item D. B. Gastineau Apartments. you want to take a break?
Can we take a short break?
Okay. Mayor. Take a break for 5 minutes.
You have to learn to look at the ladies' end of the table.
Okay, I'll call back in, okay?
Thank you, Debbie.
Okay, I thought I did. Deep in the belly. She came through the dead in the lane. Just a little bird floating on a hurricane. I was flat on my back, my feet in the thorns. I was in between the apples and the chloroform. She came to me often, I was sure I was dying. It was always hard to tell if she was laughing or crying. I thought I heard somebody calling. In the dark I thought I heard somebody call. Joan never cared about the in-betweens. Combed her hair with the blade, did the Maid of Orleans. Said Christ walking water, we could wade through the war. You don't need to tell me who the fire is for. Bring me a love that could sweeten a sword. A boat that can love the rocks of the shore. The love of an iceberg reaching out for the wreck. Can you love me like the crosses of the nape or the neck?
For the free live television recording of Rider Showcase on Friday the 13th at 7 p.m. at 360. In addition to a reading by special guests John Straley, Frank Attass, Brandon Demery, and Donnie Gott will deliver thoughtful, funny, and gritty pieces by Vivian Faith Prescott, Ed Sasser, and Melinda Moustakis. That's Rider Showcase, actors reading Alaska Writing, Friday the 13th at 7 p.m. at 360 in the K2 building. Admission is free.
And you are tuned to KTOO in Juneau, Alaska.
This is the live broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting. They are currently on a short break. The weather tonight is windy, rain, lows around 36, southeast wind 15 to 25 miles per hour, becoming light and variable late, gusts to 40 miles per hour in the evening. Tomorrow, numerous rain showers, snow level 1,000 feet, highs around 39. Tuesday night, rain showers likely, snow level 1,000 feet. Veterans Day, rain showers likely, highs around 40. Wednesday night, rain, lows around 36. Southeast wind 15 to 25 miles per hour with gusts to around 40 miles per hour. The time is now 8:20, and we'll listen to music, waiting for the assembly to come back to order.
All that you got, then don't feel alone anymore. 'Cause when we're together, then you got enough. 'Cause I am the river, and you are the shore. And it goes on.
Maybe.
Rory, you want to do the introductions, or would you like to have the manager? We'll wait for the manager for a moment.
Mr. Mayor, we're having technical difficulties, but.
Okay.
Joining the meeting. Debbie White.
Thank you, Debbie. We're just waiting on a technical glitch for a presentation, which you won't be able to see anyway, but perhaps you'll be able to interpret.
Okay.
Remember.
Is that it?
I'm still booting up.
Okay. I don't have a ticket on that. This is my first one. I just got my first. So.
Madam Manager.
A recommendation while we're waiting to, for our technical pieces. We could move on to the letter to the State Marijuana Committee.
Good idea. And do you have a report on that, please?
I don't in the, in, well, yes, I will. In your packet is a letter that the Marijuana Committee recommended moving forward to the Marijuana Control Board. It's at the very end. It's page 63 of 65 in your packet. It's very similar to letters that we have sent in the past to the Marijuana Control Board. And I'd ask for your direction on if this is acceptable to be able to go ahead and send off to them.
Here we go.
At the very end.
Yeah.
Page 63 of 65.
Excuse me. I know. It's here.
The very last page.
I don't know what I did with it.
Have members of the committee had a chance to review this prior?
They requested the drafting of the letter.
Okay. Yes. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At the last Marijuana Policy Committee, the committee did request that the city attorney draft a specific amendment language to the state's proposed regulations that reflects some of the policy requests that we made in broader terms in our previous comments. And so you'll see these three points, three primary points. The first being that the State Marijuana Control Board explicitly make violence of a local ordinance relating to marijuana reason for the state to take action against a state license. The second being that municipalities, other than peace officers, the state regulations already say a peace officer in their duties can see the marijuana inventory tracking system. But we ask that it explicitly include municipal officials or local officials in their official capacity be allowed to see the marijuana inventory tracking system. That, I think, will be of particular importance to our sales tax audits. And then finally, then point three in the letter is the request the Assembly has made in the past that the State Board remain silent on the question of marijuana clubs and leave that as a matter for local control.
Ms. Troll, do you have a comment on this?
Yes, sort of a question to the makers. I don't disagree with this letter at all on all the points. I just noticed that, you know, for point one and number two, we actually make some argument as to back up our request. On point number three, we don't have anything there to support our argument why we need the flexibility about marijuana clubs. So, I don't have language to propose, but I just think if we're going to make a request to have this be left up to the municipalities, we just do a little stronger job in making our case as to why we need that discretion.
Ms. Crane?
When I first read the letter, I don't object to anything in it either, but we came to the specific point that you're talking about, and there's not been any discussion of that issue by the Assembly as a whole. I really haven't made up my mind on that issue at this point, but I'm willing to go with the language in the letter because what it is simply asking for is local control.
Right.
And that's what we want here. So while I'm happy with it on that basis.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Talking specifically on Section 3. I would just point out that under the statute that was approved by the initiative being approved. Under 1738.020D, where it talks about personal use of marijuana, it says consumption of marijuana, except that nothing in this chapter shall permit the consumption of marijuana in public. I would also point out that in Section 1738.040, public consumption banned, and states a penalty, said it's unlawful to consume marijuana in public. A person who violates this section is guilty of a violation punishable by a fine up to $100. And the last sentence of that paragraph basically says may be legally consumed absent conflict with state law. State law specifically says you will not consume in public. So I don't see how local control is even an issue when the state law says you may not consume in public. So no matter what you do, if I vote yay or nay, I will be asked to recuse myself on November 20th when that section is discussed. So you will, by submitting this letter, you take my vote away, just to let you know.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. With my apologies to Mr. Jones for the fairly ridiculous reading the Department of Law has made, no, patently ridiculous reading the Department of Law has made, misinterpreting the State's Administrative Procedure Act to keep him from voting. I'm sorry about that. To the substance of the comment, the definition of what is in public and what is in private is frankly a legal creation. We could have, and may still someday, when we define what constitutes consuming marijuana in public, include people's front yards if they're visible to the public. We chose not to do that, and that counts as in private in the city and borough of Juneau, and I believe in the state of Alaska. Now, I've got a 4-foot-high chain link fence around my front yard. So what we define as in public and what we define as in private for purposes of the law and for purposes of the initiative, frankly, is up to legislative bodies. And that's a local control issue. And the initiative did not define in public. So Mr. Jones is probably where I should let the other assembly members know that I, in my personal capacity, and I flagged it twice as such, commented to the state board that they simply don't have the legal right to ban marijuana clubs. They're breaking state law if they do it. We'll see what their lawyers say. That said, I think that the question of whether the state may remain silent on marijuana clubs and leave that to municipalities is certainly an open question, and certainly they could take the action we request here. I have a communication. Ms. White is looking for a call. She can't dial in.
Thank you.
Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just responding to the comments heard right now, I have no objection with the letter going out as currently written. I think in the interest of moving things forward, I move that we forward the letter as drafted to the Marine Marijuana Control Board.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, so you go. You object?
I object to this letter.
Do you wish to speak to your objection?
Well, I would be less than inconsistent, or I would be inconsistent if I didn't continue to say how much I do not agree with us even considering marijuana clubs. We've talked about it before. We talked about it in the committee. I personally have worked very hard to get the smoking ordinance in place. Maybe you don't know that, but I did. And it is a good ordinance, and our town is better for it, in my opinion. And I think most of you agree with that. And I think this is just opening up a big fight over something that will, in my opinion, destroy the smoking ordinance. And there's no reason to do it. And even though maybe the ordinance did not say to or whatever not to, I thought that the attorneys told the board that they they could not allow smoking clubs. They couldn't allow it because they didn't have the authority to monitor it. And I'm not sure if that is correct or not correct, but that's what I think I was told. I see no reason for us to get into this at all, and I want to be on record that I oppose number three. I do not oppose the other two, but number three I oppose. And I want to be on record that years from now, I don't want the public to think that I just helped destroy the smoking ordinance. I do not want that. Serving, it's not worth it to even serve on this board if that's what I do. So
thank
I feel strongly. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, for indulging.
Thank you. Is there further comment? We have a motion to direct the city manager to send a letter as written, and there's objection to the motion. Would the clerk please call a roll?
Bill, I would, maybe I just want to remove that. Can I amend by removing that number three?
I'll accept that amendment.
Thank you.
And I'll object.
Okay. Now we have an amendment that we have to vote on. Is there any further comment on this, or shall we just vote on the amendment? So would you call a roll on the amendment?
Yes.
The amendment would remove paragraph number three.
Ms. Troll.
No.
Ms. White. Ms. Becker.
Yes.
Ms. Crane.
No.
Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
No.
Mr. Keough.
No.
Ms. White. Mayor Fisk.
No.
Motion passed.
Which brings us back to the motion to direct the city manager to send the letter as written. And there was objection to that originally, so please call the roll on that.
Joining the meeting.
Debbie White.
Do you want to explain where she's voting?
That's all right.
Okay. Ms. Becker.
No.
Ms. Crane.
Yes.
Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
Yes.
Mr. Keough.
Yes.
Ms. Troll.
Yes.
Ms. White.
Madam Clerk, I was cut off again and had a hard time dialing in. Can you please tell me what I'm voting on?
Yeah. This is direction to the city manager to send a letter to the State Marijuana Control Board as recommended by the Marijuana Committee and as presented to us.
Okay. Okay, that is yes. Thank you.
Mayor Fisk.
Yes.
Motion carried.
Okay, so that brings us back to item B, Gastineau Apartments. Madam Manager.
And I will introduce Mr. Coogan, who will introduce his team that will be providing a short presentation tonight.
Okay, we're here to talk about the Gastineau Apartments. I'm Wayne Coogan. I live in Juneau. And you've had some difficult decisions in the past couple of years, and we're here to offer you something different. I brought Mr. Sunline, Carl Sunline, with Public Private Partnership from Seattle. James Hurley with KPH Consulting in Seattle, and Tony Oro with the local architect from JYL. I'm going to let Mr. Schimmel take it from here.
Thank you, Mayor, councilpersons, and staff for allotting this time. Like Wayne said, my name is Garth Schlemline. I've been a construction attorney and development in the development field for about 31 years now. Wayne and Jim and I graduated from BCON in 1979, so we've known each other for roughly 34 years. But Wayne, this is the presentation concerns the Gastineau Apartments. And for the last two or three years, Wayne and I and Jim have, and kind of like you folks, frankly, have made a run at trying to buy these apartments and been unsuccessful in doing so. Until last 2 weeks ago, Thursday, October 30th, I think as a result of the potential potential demolition, we were able to secure a binding purchase sale agreement from the Garrett or the Barretts limited liability company that A, obligates them to sell the property to us, and B, obligates them to cooperate with us in any permitting that we would want to do in terms of working with the city to secure permits for this particular property. We've had several discussions with the city personnel in the last few days, both myself and Jim and Wayne, and I just want to explore some of the options that you folks have, and maybe we have a better mousetrap that helps preserve a 105-year-old historical building in your city. So I'll just start with the first one here, and I've handed you out the PowerPoint, and it's up here as well, obviously. I'm not going to reiterate it other than just make a few points here, and the demolition option is certainly one that's on the table. I understand you've got a contractor out there, a contract awarded, but no notice to proceed, and frankly, the city's been kind enough to allow us the opportunity to, A, get the property under contract, and B, come tonight to make a little presentation before you folks, before allowing the notice to proceed and actually the demolition to take place. But for our view, that you're going to be probably underwater somewhere between $1 million and $1.6 million after the property's demoed and you have a vacant lot. Talking to Amy, you can certainly have a potential deficiency action against the Barretts, but you know, I'm a litigator, a construction litigator, and sometimes litigation is tough to collect what you otherwise think you're was doing owing you. So, again, that's your option. The demolition we can accomplish in 4 or 5 months. But we looked at another option, and that is affordable housing. I have substantial experience in affordable housing. I built the first affordable housing project in Ketchum, Idaho. I've represented a number of my developers that do low-income housing tax credits, and this is certainly an option of this particular property. It could be restored with 41 residential units, including the ground-level apartments, or ground-level retail, excuse me. The problem is, though, frankly, is we have a four-month contingency in our purchase and sale agreement, and in all honesty, it'll take roughly 4 months to figure it out. In other words, can we get the capital from, whether it be a portion from the city, from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation tax credits, or maybe other sources to fill the gap? Because typically, affordable units do not create enough income to support the debt service. So you have to have other sources of income. And putting all the pieces together, and we met with one of my clients, GMD Development, Greg Dunfield, does a lot of it, and we've been working with them on evaluating the potential of turning this into an affordable housing project, which the city needs. But I can't, in all honesty, sit in front of you today and say we'll know within 30 days whether or not that can be a reality, because it's going to take some time to put all the pieces together to make that a reality. In our meetings with the city personnel the last few weeks, it's become apparent that you folks have been dealing with this project or property for a long time and probably are tired of it, the eyesore that it is for you. And that was saying the fact it's a beautiful building, you know, I think you want to move on. And so looking at that in terms of timing, Wayne, to his credit, came up with another idea. And that is that the ability to essentially take the property, abate any asbestos or environmental problems inside the building itself, repair the exterior, demo the waste and stuff from the fire, structurally repair it. It is structurally repairable. We've had engineers look at it. It can be structurally repaired. Put a new roof on it. And at the end of the day, we'd like to work out something with the city to actually turnkey it and provide it back to the city. We'll know within 30 days whether or not that is viable, what it'll cost, and hopefully, you know, be able to work out something with the city that is not only financially acceptable, works within the parameters of your city code and your ordinances. We're confident we can do that within a 30-day period. And that would keep the building in its present state in terms of what it's going to look like, but also provide the options for the city, whether it wants offices, apartments, housing in there. You have all kinds of options available to yourself under this particular scenario, and it would not be a situation that would take months and months and months, the contingency period that we talked about under the affordable housing program, to come to a financial agreement and figure out if we can make that work. We've done a little bit of cost-benefit analysis between the three options, and this kind of laid out here in this particular slide, understanding that your expenditure in terms of demolition, how much you recover is a matter of conjecture at this point in time. The affordable housing option is certainly, we would look for the city for some assistance in that to keep it as a affordable housing situation. And then the last option, C, which we talked about, would be the city would own it, control it, and be free of any kind of litigation prospectively with the Barretts or others. The next, again, is a timeline. If you did option A, your own, when you're kind of the demolition option, it's probably a 4 to 6 month period. As I indicated earlier, the option to do the affordable housing, to get the financing, permitting, design, and actually build it is about a 30 to 36 month project, realistically. And then finally, the turnkey is probably a 6 to 8 month project, depending upon the permitting and that sort of thing, which wouldn't be that substantial because we're not doing anything interior-wise. The mechanical, electrical, plumbing would be basically left out for the ultimate user to put in consistent with the use they intend to do. What will the property look like after completion? Of course, option A will have a vacant lot. With some of the existing structure remaining to hold back the slope, the toe of the hill there, option B, you'll have a fully restored mixed-use residential property with, you know, again, restoring the, preserving the building facade, which Wayne will talk about in a moment here. And option C, again, you'll have the building restored to its original look and feel, if you will, except I think it was 2 stories on top of the retail originally. Now there's 3. So after it was built, they added another story. But it would look like it would restore the original facade to its really the workmanship is quite remarkable, considering how long it's lasted for the last 105 years. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Wayne, who will talk a bit about the his motivation for what he's seen and about his property. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. When I first, the reason why I got involved in this discussion was because of the demolition contract. It concerned me as a person living in Juneau all my life and a taxpayer that we were going to spend something $1.5 million to $1.6 million to end up with a vacant lot. So I just wanted to look at other options, give the city a choice. But then as I did that and got involved with others, the more I looked at the building, the more I realized what we're dealing with here. And it is a historic architectural treasure. And I looked at it closer and closer, and I see, if you look at this building, it was built 20 years before the state capitol, about 20 years before the state capitol. And if you look at the historic district, most of the buildings are wood frame, and a lot of them have plaster, and some of them are concrete. The higher quality ones are concrete, and they have Art Deco and a lot of fancy, expensive work on them. But this one here, I have to say, in looking at it closer, it stands above. It stands above most of them. Next slide, please. Okay, if you see the last drawing, you see I've taken, because due to my lack of technical abilities and also lack of time here, preparing here, I colored in. You'll see some places where I colored in where you have terracotta tile inlays. And even on the First National Bank building, which is something that's similar to this, they don't have that level of craftsmanship. This thing here, there's some serious workmanship in here. And if we went further and showed, you know, if you look at these little triangles down here. They match terracotta tile with those friezes above the windows, which are all terracotta tile, which match the diamonds above those. This thing is truly somewhat of a treasure, and I just feel I'm getting wrapped up in it emotionally, and other business people will tell me that's rather foolish, but I feel myself going down that road, but I can't help it. I mean, look at if you go up and look at this thing, it really truly is something that needs to be preserved in my mind. As a final thought, you know, I'd like to say that the city has been through a similar experience just down the street. With where the new Sea Alaska Heritage Building is built, I think the city spent, almost a decade trying to resolve a vacant lot situation there. And, I just dread to think that if we're going to throw money at going down that same track on this project here, I would hope otherwise. Tony Yorba, is there anything else that you can add as far as the architectural aspect of this?
No, other than
Would
Tony Yorbit, Juneau, Jensen Yorba Lot. Just the city and borough of Juneau has a great resource, the Historic Preservation Database, and this building is on there, and it has pictures of the original building as a three-story structure and then earlier pictures of it as a four-story structure. And on those, if you look closely, you can see the level of detailing and stuff that, that Wayne's talking about. And so the idea would be to bring back all of that, that level of detailing. Just as a final thought, a person from our office just attended the SHPO conference up in Anchorage, and members of SHPO were bemoaning the fact that another historic building with all of the potentials and the values of a historic building was being lost. And so this is an opportunity to sort of turn that around. Thank you.
Garth, again, before we wrap up, any questions for anyone about our thoughts?
Sure.
Ms. Crane.
Okay, when I read the newspaper article, I was under the impression that you had purchased the building. Now, if I understand you correctly, you have a purchase agreement, but you have 4 or 6 months. That agreement is contingent upon finding funding for the purchase?
No. Well, you're almost correct. Okay, exactly. We have a purchase and sale agreement that is enforceable, that we can, if the Barrett's balk, we could go to court and get, force them to sell us the property. We have a contingency period, 4 months. It's for our benefit. It's not for ours. We can pull the trigger anytime we want. But we just got this under contract on October 30th. So our first mindset when we got under contract was we would need the four-month period to explore an affordable housing program and pull the partners together and get the financing. It's not contingent on that, but to get that.
But my question is, could we find ourselves in March or April in the same situation that we have found ourselves over and over again with the Gastineau, where if you don't find the funding, we're back dealing with the Barretts again?
Very fair question. No.
Why is that?
Because what we are, the alternative C, option C, if you will, is you know, when we tied this up, we didn't recognize the sense of urgency that you folks had to move on. And I totally get it. You're sick and tired of being tired and sick. And that's a very fair sentiment. And that's why we have morphed away from the affordable housing and the time it would take to pull that together to a more right-off-tackle, straightforward deal that we will know within 30 days what it's going to take us to do what we're planning, what we talked about doing, providing the shell and then in attempt to work on an agreement with the city to effectuate that. You know, we talked to Amy about it. She has some concerns. I understand that. And you know, there's two functions of this. One is figuring out the economics, and one is figuring out procedurally how we would work out an arrangement with the city. We're talking 30 days. We're not talking March or April. And so we're not here to stretch this thing out another 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months. We're here to 30 days. We'll pour the coals to it from our end to do what we need to do to evaluate the cost for this. And we'll work with our council, Dan Bruce, to work with the city to see if we can work out a mechanism that works for you folks. So that's our, we recognize you don't want to wait for us to figure out the financing on a normal deal, if you will. And so we're kind of moving away from that to another alternative that Wayne came up with to satisfy your specific concern.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And that's what, when you're now focusing on option C, I don't understand how we get to option C. The city does not own the building, and neither do you. And
we would.
Option C says city owns the restored property. Under, how does that happen?
What we would do is we would, if assuming we have an assuming we have an agreement with the city, we would purchase the property, we would do all the work that we talked about here on our nickel, and then we would have what we're looking for is having an arrangement with the city where they will essentially purchase us from us when we're all done. So we would own it, we would finance it, we would complete it consistent with the specification that we all agreed to in terms of what the final product would look like. Then you would have the building, it would be restored on the outside, it would be generally cleaned up on the inside, new roof, painted, all the structural work that needs to be done would be accomplished. And then it would turnkey to the city, and the city would have options. They could put offices in it. They could sell it to a nonprofit. They could do part of it housing on the smaller building on the right-hand side, and offices on the left plus retail below. You would have lots of options, but you would preserve that particular structure, and you would have an opportunity to realize on your investment as opposed to
tearing it down.
Follow up, Ms.
Just follow up. So you think you can figure that
Mr. Mayor?
Stuff out in 30 days?
Yes.
As far as how much it's going to cost and et cetera?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's you know, you can talk to Rory about it, but it's not, what we're talking about doing is not rocket science. It's not, you know, a typical building when you have, you know, a complex design with mechanical, electrical, plumbing, those things take time to do, but a simple exterior restoration. We've already had the structural folks take a look at it and made recommendations already on how to accomplish a structural renovation to beef up the building where it is problematic because of the fire. So that component is not very hard. I mean, it is fairly straightforward what we're proposing to do from a construction standpoint and a pricing standpoint.
Ms. White?
Yes, I'm not sure if this question would be directed towards our city attorney or Mr. Coogan's attorney, but he kind of lost me at purchase and sale agreement because I thought that's what the other party had going on, and I've never heard of somebody having two on the same property, you know, like a seller having two without getting in a lot of trouble. So can someone please clarify?
I'm happy to answer that.
What the other contracts were?
Sure, from my perspective. Again, I've been practicing real estate law for 31 years. There's a one-page memorandum, I think it's a letter of intent. It's not an enforceable agreement in terms of you could get specific performance in a court of law. It's an agreement to agree upon a purchase and sale agreement at a later date, assuming certain conditions are met. That kind of agreement is not the kind of agreement we have. We have the conversations with the Barretts, frankly, where they wanted a one-page kind of loosey-goosey document, and I said no. It wasn't worth our time and effort to, if we're going to try and make a go of this thing, we had to have a solid, enforceable purchase to sale agreement, which we have. The other document is not. It's a letter of intent. It's a totally different animal. And I can understand if you had it, you might be not happy that the situation you're in, but it's an agreement to agree on a subsequent date. It's a different animal. So there's not two separate purchase and sale agreements on this particular property. And
I understand the difference between the two types of documents. I just thought both parties had an actual agreement with earnest money in the whole nine yards.
No, they don't. And frankly, you know, that's our, you know, I'm happy to take that risk. I mean, we would close on the property. We would spend the money. We would go forward on it based upon the strength of the document that we have.
Are there other questions?
Okay.
Control.
We all have lots of questions here this evening, Mr. Mayor. But on this very point right here, I am trying to understand who really owns the property, because you do have a purchase agreement, which is much more lengthy and exhaustive. And in that agreement, it makes a reference that there are no other representations, agreements, or arrangements or understandings that affect this building, when there is an agreement that affects this building. And the previous signers of the letter of intent to purchase, you know, they had 60 days to come together and finalize things. Mm-hmm. And we're still within that 60-day window.
Well,
so
all I can tell you is that we have, these are representations that the Barretts through their company made to us, okay? And, you know, we can, like we said earlier, we have a four-month contingency period. We can waive it to court earlier at our discretion. This one-page document is not a purchase and sale agreement that is enforceable. I'm comfortable with what I have right here to enforce our particular agreement. Now, the Barretts may have a claim against them for breach of contract between them and the other folks. Really, that's not my issue. I hope they don't, but that's kind of their problem, not my problem. We have a relatively right-off-tackle, straightforward purchase-sale agreement that I've closed probably 70 properties with over the last 20, 25 years, and really been doing a lot of this stuff. So this is an agreement that will stand up in court. This is an agreement that provides us the opportunity to exercise our right to purchase the property. And it meets all the statute of frauds, to be legalistic here. The requirements of the statute of frauds to have an enforceable document, this one meets. So we have the ability to close.
One more question.
No, just as a follow-up, it would be very beneficial for me to hear a response from our city attorney on this matter, and if she has any advice for us on how to proceed vis-a-vis the legal issues here.
The only legal issue for you is what the scope of our authority is over that property, which is only via the demolition order. So none of the agreements that I've seen so far contain the necessary language that is required by our code. We have a recorded document where the buyer of that property has to acknowledge the lien and assume the lien. And that I don't know who's doing that. I don't have an opinion about whose purchase and sale agreement trumps the other. And for your purposes, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The scope of your decision is whether or not you want to postpone the current track you're on. But we can't enter into agreements for things to happen on the property unless we are dealing with the owner of the property. I do have concerns that were noted about our ability to enter into that third proposal where we end up as the owner of the property. I'm not sure how we would get to that yet. I need to hear more concrete, no pun intended, proposal as to what they're, how they're thinking that would happen. I don't know that yet.
Mr. Jones.
We don't currently have a lien on the property. We have a demolition order.
We have we have recorded the demolition order. There's very specific language that we will require and that the owner is required as being under a currently valid demolition order to include in any purchase and sale agreement. A sale is not possible unless that language is included in the sales agreement under the IPMC, which is adopted per our code.
Well, that's different from a lien.
Yeah. Yeah.
Madam Manager, I believe you were suggesting that we hear from Mr. Watt with regard to how this would affect the current direction.
Yes, please.
One other point, if you wouldn't mind. If we bought this thing, we'd obviously take subject to that. I mean, we'd acknowledge.
Mr. Mayor, could we add to Mr. Watt's presentation, please, the notion that structure can be rehabilitated. I thought we'd issued a demolition order because it can't.
I think we can ask any question we want at this point. Rory, did you want to lead in with some comments on what's been stated or just respond to questions?
a few comments and then maybe I'll respond to the questions that you have. I guess Mr. Keel's comment about whether it could be renovated, and my answer to that is yes, it could be renovated. It's a matter of economics. It's a matter of whether it's worth doing and the return you get from the money you spend. I don't think there are any fatal flaws in the concrete shells of the buildings. Certainly, the interior systems, the electrical, mechanical, the flooring, the walls, and in the burned-out building are gone, but there are the gross structural elements could be salvaged. Does that answer your question?
The second part was how do I square that with the demolition order that we issued on the understanding that that was not the case, that the only way to bring the property to code was to demolish it.
May I?
Ms. Mead.
The IPMC provides that when the building official finds that the structure is so far beyond repair or where it is economically not feasible to repair, that the demolition order can enter. And what we had before us back when the order was issued were three reports, if I'm remembering correctly. One which opined that if the property were taken care of, a temporary roof were put on, that the structure could be repaired. And we had two reports that said the structure is best to come down because it's not economically feasible So when we issued the demolition order to the Barretts, it required that it be demolished or that the Barretts come forward with another plan, leaving open that option if they wished to do so. But they did not, and it was the decision by staff that it would made most financial sense to take it down because it would cost much, much more to repair.
Ms. Crane.
Just a comment. Through the many, many, many discussions we have had on this building, and one of the reasons that we decided not to take the building as eminent domain was the conversation that we have had stating that we are not in the housing business, and that it has been our belief that this should be a private sector enterprise. And so I know we're a long way from making a decision to get to item C, but I would just remind us that that's been a consistent part of the discussion throughout the Gastineau saga.
Other questions for Mr. Watt? Troy, did you have further comments?
Maybe a follow-up on the economics of a renovation. Costs of renovation can vary wildly, and that can be from contractors having better or worse ideas on how to renovate, or greater appetites for risk. A really good example is our bid for the demolition. So we had four bids, and if I remember right, we had 1.3, 1.6, 2, and 2.6. So it does not strike me as unusual to find that some people would look at renovating that building as not economical, while some might.
Really quick, Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Watt, regarding the whole process for the demolition order and everything, and we just heard some testimony here that the new potential owners need 30 days to sort of lock in finances and a plan to proceed on a modified path here. What is that? If we allow that 30 days, what does that do to the timeline vis-a-vis the demolition order? Is there something that we could proceed with to keep the pressure on so that we don't end up trying to demolish the building too late into the tourist season?
So when we bid the demolition, we gave the bidders a completion date of their work of April 30th. We have not issued the low bidder the notice to proceed. When the earnest money agreement was given to us, we paused for this meeting. So your question really is, how much time do we have to deliberate this without losing the certainty of April 30th completion of demolition? That's really your question.
Thank you for being more articulate than me.
In any construction project, you're playing with the balance of time and cost. And the more time you use up at the front end of a project, the more you expose yourself to paying more in order to keep that same completion period. I think where you are, you would be reluctant to sit and hold tight for 30 days and do nothing. I think that would jeopardize the completion schedule and or the cost of that demolition. The only way that I can imagine that you can entertain what the PPP group is going to come up with in that 30-day period, yet retain some certainty on completing the demolition on time, is to maintain a little bit of a parallel track, which involves committing some money. And the proposal I would have is that we issue to the low bidder a limited notice to proceed, And in that limited notice to proceed, we would direct them to prepare their engineered demolition plan, prepare their project schedule, prepare their staging plans, their road closures, their trucking routes, draft up PSAs, all the things that they would have to do before they actually initiate the work. I would imagine that we would be talking something on the order of $50,000 or so. So you would spend that money in this 30-day period if you wanted to keep both options forward while you waited for the PVP group to provide you more detail. It's the only way I can try to give you both outcomes.
Mr. Watt, a clarification on that. Would that include some initial cleanup work or just a design of the demolition plan?
It would not. This would be all on paper. This would be planning, talking, paper. It would not be entering the site and commencing cleanup.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
A couple of very just disjointed questions, I'm afraid, but just to follow up on Ms. Troll first, when do we need to issue the order to proceed and maintain the contractor's cost bid? I assume most of these contracts, if we haven't awarded it within 30 days or 90 days, then they're free to change their pricing. So that's the first question. Second one is, I think the last time you were before us, you were talking about the contractor wanting to accelerate the process, which included starting to take some of the artwork and stuff out of the park, starting to stage things. What I hear you saying is you would limit it so that wouldn't happen. But in none of this proposal from Mr. Coogan is the park discussed at all. So I guess there's maybe two questions in there. One is the acceleration that you talked about the contractor wanted to do. You want to hold them back. And then the third one is the park. So there's three questions there.
I've got three questions. So standard language in our contracts when we bid them is we tell bidders that they have to hold their prices, in this case, 60 days. If we sat on their price for 60 days, I think we would have to have a long discussion about the completion date. We can make them hold that price, but if we eat up a third of their performance period, that's what we would be doing. I do not think that we necessarily could keep the same completion date at the same price. Second, they would like to get working. I don't know about if I would use the term accelerate, but there are a number of procedural steps that they were on the brink of taking. Notifying DEC about their abatement work was the first step that they'd actually already done in advance of getting the notice to proceed. So they would like to start. And we're holding them back. And they're listening on the radio, too, so they can try and understand whether they're going to work for us or not. Three, the park. Whether you're demolishing or renovating that building, you need the park to do it in an economical fashion. You could demolish from the street. You could renovate from the street, but it'd be very difficult, very challenging for anybody working on the collection of three buildings. That's really what it is. You need a staging area. You need some room to work. And so I think the park is integral to any of the things that you're talking about tonight.
You know, procedurally, this may be a little bit odd, but we have a number of people who signed up to testify in this as well. And I think if we need to, we can bring Mr. Watt back after we hear that testimony. We may provoke some other questions. So with your concurrence, I will move to public testimony on this item. I believe we have seven people signed up to discuss this in order. Dave Hurley. Would you come forward and identify yourself and where you live?
Hi, I'm Dave Hurley at 3290 Douglas Highway. First off, it's probably important to note that, my firm has an interest in the project proceeding as it's already sort of slated to proceed. We were the company contracted with to develop the demolition plan, the initial demolition plan. And as well, we've been approached by Bauer and Clifton. My firm is Northwind. Rory is reminding me. And second, we have been approached by Bauer and Clifton to assist them in, their proposal, which you're pretty aware of, I think. So that said, I think what I'm going to follow with here obviously needs to be taken with a grain of salt. But it's exciting on the one hand that there's so much interest now in, this, so that's a great thing. And actually, the proposal that Wayne's put forward here is pretty intriguing, especially with the various options. So it raises a lot of questions, and I think I don't know what the sort of agenda is for actually making a decision as to whether or not to follow the notice to proceed for the demolition. I think that's not on the table tonight, right? Or is it? I guess that's a.
It could be.
Okay. Well, there you go. You know, there are a lot of moving parts here, and I think it's worth giving yourselves some time to think about that, because you know which direction the project goes, I think, have pretty significant differing ramifications. And so, I have a couple concerns about proceeding with not proceeding with demolition. And one is that, and I guess I'm echoing Ms. Crane's comments earlier, I've been involved sort of peripherally and directly with this project since very recently after the fire occurred, and it has been an ongoing kind of saga, and it's been a tremendous burden on adjacent business owners and really the whole downtown community. And there is the risk of that if you lose the momentum that you've gained at this point, that it's feasible that we could be looking at this thing 2 years from now, you know. So that's a concern as a local downtown business owner myself, and also having clients, adjacent to the property who've suffered for having that structure there in that condition. But the second is as a downtown business owner and someone who individually and as a firm has been involved in downtown revitalization efforts. You know, we have an interest in seeing progressive growth-based development in downtown, because that's, in our experience, that's the sort of thing that actually does the most to revitalize. That is private development in the downtown context. And I think keeping the existing structure, and of course this is not the issue that's on the table, that's important to say, but nonetheless, I'm sure it's going to factor in individuals' decision-making. Keeping the existing structure limits significantly the sort of expansiveness and creativity of a potential private development on that site. I think you mentioned 40-some-odd units. You know, the potential, if the existing structure is demolished and that site becomes possible to reconfigure that site, you may be looking at quite a larger number of units, and that has a lot of benefits, potential benefits to both the vibrancy of downtown, which we're interested in, and also as tax base for the city and borough. So that's something that we want to support in any way we can, and this in some ways is an exciting opportunity to hopefully attract a private developer who wants to really maximize the opportunity that site represents. And it is significant, especially on that intersection. And then just, I guess, an aside, and if I'm running out of time here, let me know, and I'll
close.
Get out of here. I am concerned about the effort and the expense of redeveloping that existing structure. I think that the return on investment is, and I'm pretty familiar with that structure, the return on investment is thin to begin with. And when that's the case on any development project, you run the risk of lowering the standard that you develop it to. So in other words, while the idea of this wonderful sort of historic restoration sounds great, how much money will really be available to invest in the quality of that restoration, given all of the other things that need to be done simply to make the building safe and habitable? You know, some construction budget is your construction budget, you know, and so to make it pencil, is that possible with a redevelopment strategy? So I think that's all I have to say.
Any questions for Mr. Hurley? Ms. Kloszewski?
Mr. Hurley, you're an architect, correct?
Yes, I am.
And you are familiar with the building, so you just basically brought up maybe, maybe not. What's your opinion on maybe, maybe not? Does it pencil, in your opinion, to...
I
mean,
have
do you have enough information to answer that question?
I really don't. I haven't done enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other questions? Thank you. You know, I'd ask in the interest of the late hour that testimony be limited to about 3 minutes here each. And if you're going to be repeating the same thing that was said before, you can just emphasize that rather than repeating all of it. So the next person we have is Colleen. Is it Gold?
Goldrich.
Gold? Oh, Colleen Goldrich. Sorry, didn't recognize your writing.
Hi, I'm Colleen Goldrich. My address is 513 West 12th Street, and I had quite a statement of what I wanted to say, but you know, in light of everything that's come up, it doesn't maybe necessarily all apply, except for after listening to everything, I still would encourage you to keep the demolition schedule, although maybe taking the time to see if that would work. I own Annie Kale's on Front Street, and the structure had impacts our neighborhood a lot. I think it's a wonderful idea to keep that building, but I don't know how realistic that is. And in saving the money and demolition, I wonder if the city has money to do anything other than have a nice-looking shell in the end that will continue to have the same problems that we're seeing right now with the building. And it would, in my mind, degrade. And what I'm specifically talking about, for instance, is our upper office looks right out across into the doorway of the Gastineau apartments. And there, it's constantly filled with people getting out of the weather, which would be fine, except for they're drinking, they're smoking pot or doing drugs or whatever they're doing, getting it on, yelling at people, panhandling. And, you know, when people are walking up the hill to go to Rockwell or to go up to the Baranoff or any of those areas, I just think it's such a sketchy scene. I don't like to walk up on that side of the street. I walk on the other side of the street where there are no awnings. It's really detrimental to the area. It's detrimental the second a fight breaks out in that area, which is constant. When people start yelling and all of that, it, as a business owner, affects our businesses for hours afterwards. In the summer, in the winter, when it's dark, I just worry that we'll end up in the same position we are now, with a nice-looking shell that will then degrade, and there will be no improvement, and the opportunities that we have right now may go away in terms of developing it into something new.
Thank you, Colleen. Any questions for Ms. Goldrich? Thank you very much. The next person is Tracy LaBarge. Tracy? Please state your name and address for the record.
Hi, Tracy LaBarge, 2913 Blueberry Hills Road. I will keep it brief. I understand there's a need for affordable housing. I don't think this is it. And quite frankly, the more I hear tonight, I'm mad as hell. I don't know how this happened. We've been waiting for this demolition for 3 years. Let's get on with it. You know, I supported Bauer and Clifton and their ideas. It's a great idea for downtown. It's where a lot of us business owners want to see things go. You know, we spend a lot of money in this town to make our businesses better,
which we didn't have to spend. I could have kept the same old restaurants and done nothing. I spent a lot of money to make my business better. I want people downtown that are going to invest in my business. So I'm pretty upset about this. There's a great need for middle to high income housing in town. Once those people move up, there is more affordable housing available. We have a lot of slums that are extremely expensive right now, and they need some competition. Urban development is booming all across the country. I think it's very short-sighted for the city to think $1.8 million. That park costs more than, what, $1 million to do that park. The returns in the future are going to be so much better, and the future of downtown is going to be so much better to put a little bit of, if we put a little bit of thought and a little bit of money into this in the beginning. I think it's time for the city to tear this thing down. It's time to invest in some smart infrastructure that is going to make things better for the future. I have a hard time understanding why Mr. Coogan had the second highest bid to tear it down, and now all of a sudden it's worth preserving. That seems a little sketchy to me. I don't know what his reason is behind that, but it's definitely not anything I want to see. Thank you.
Are there any questions from Ms. LaBarge? Thank you, Tracy. Next person is Tanya Cadigan.
Good evening. My name is Tanya Cadigan, address 1644 2nd Street. My parents opened up a retail store 30 years ago downtown when I was 12 years old, and so I essentially have evolved on South Franklin Street, for lack of better words, with the growth and expansion of our town and tourism. I own my own business now for the last 18 years, Caribou Crossings Downtown. This, again, not to get repetitive, thank you for reminding us about that, but I feel incredibly passionate about the demolition of this building. Part of what we are here doing on South Franklin Street is enticing our locals to shop with us, to shop locally and support our businesses, and also to provide a memorable experience for our visitors. We're visitors when we go into other communities and to other locations, and we want to be enraptured and excited and in a place that's desirable and intriguing and exciting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is not that. This part of town does not enhance anybody's experience, not ours on a local level, not our visitors who are coming to see our community. I think a demolition would allow us to open up other opportunities and mixed-use opportunities. Our independent travelers right now, we're seeing an increase in those. With the decrease in the Alaska Airlines prices with Delta coming in, I saw more independent travelers than I've seen in years coming into my store this summer. Our small ship passengers have increased exponentially as well. On cruise, for example, those passengers are paying $7,000 to $12,000 a week to go on those cruises. They want to stay in town. They want to be here for a couple of days. It's hard to find a hotel. It's hard to find a hotel that suits what they desire. I believe Bower Clifton have a phenomenal concept that bridges what we need on a local level, mixed use with hotel. It addresses the pocket park. It addresses parking. If this building stays as it is, a retailer, pardon me, I don't think any retailer could be successful in that space with the pocket park as it stands as the entryway to that space. It's impossible. And sorry, is that my time? Okay. Okay, so thank you for your ears, and I apologize to all of you that you've had to endure the burden of this building for so long, because I'm very compassionate for that, because we've been bearing the burden of walking past it, being a part of it, and getting the feedback from our visitors and our locals. So I feel for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions for Ms. Cadigan? Thank you very much. Next person is Jeremy Bauer.
Thank you.
Jeremy Bauer, 318 Highland Drive, Juneau. What I'd like to do, I'd like to speak in support of demolishing the Gastineau apartment building. I believe the city has completed their due diligence in regards to allowing the current owners to exercise their right to rectify the situation, and the continued delay could result in a loss of current demolition contract. More importantly, I strongly feel that placing a subsidized housing project in this location of Juneau does not promote economic development or support the revitalization of downtown. A mandated property tax reduction of up to 40 to 50% would most likely result in an overall tax collection that would have minimal impact to the city's budget crisis, and the continued patrolling of Pocket Park will only continue to be a burden on the city. And what about the parking needs of the building as it sits now? The city could realize significant financial impact with the development of a mixed-use facility that incorporates many features. In our development team's most recent proposal to the city, we included a 60-room boutique hotel, conference and meeting facilities, 12 condominiums, 12 apartment rentals, and included parking facility for both public and private use. For example, if we looked at the possible financial outcome of what our project could produce, property tax on a $30 million building, $322,000 a year, a hotel tax at $195,000 a year, sales tax at $199,000, and property tax on the condominiums at $129,000. This could result between $700,000 and $850,000 a year. A $1.8 million investment could yield $16 million over 20 years, as this performer described here. The tax accumulation from this project like this is easily recognized with a series of formulas based on previous projects of our development team. What should be on the mind of everyone is what the impact of one solution over the other in regards to the economic development of downtown. How many more people with disposable income would now frequent the local establishments in this neighborhood? How would they add vitality around Pocket Park and the possible incorporation into a fully realized development to relieve the police department from their past track record of the burdens that has burdened the city even before the fire? But I also like to be clear that we do support housing in Juneau, from affordable to luxury, but placement is key to the success of them. The solution of the demolition should be looked at as a cost, not as a cost to the city, but as a short-term investment to the economic development of Juneau. This is an opportunity for the city to enact their proposed plan, clean up the eyesore, create a suitable site to build upon, and provide an opportunity for the developer to bring income-producing project to the site. Please enact the demolition.
Any questions, Mr. Bauer? Ms. Troll?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bauer, there's lots of aspects of your proposal that are very appealing, and I think we expressed that when you came before us before. And my interest right here is not so much trying to choose between the two and what's the best long-term plan. Mm-hmm. I want to deal with the new owner. Mm-hmm. In my mind, that's really the essence of what I'm struggling with is, are you the owner? You've got a few more days before your letter of intent expires. Is Mr. Coogan and his people, they've got their purchase agreement. Are they the new owners? And so I want to work with whoever is the owner and not so much have to figure out.
Say that we've tried every aspect to try to actually get to that point. And actually, as today I heard, there's actually a third purchase order on the table that another developer's come in and set something up. I think basically what we're down to is we all know the owners that we're dealing with, and they're struggling. They're grasping to try to figure out a solution here. And how long are they going to continue to do this? I mean, we've tried working with the city, tried working with them to come up with language that would allow us to move forward and do exactly what we've said. Our project's not going away. We've made every effort to say that we're going to work with the demolition, we're going to work with your timeline, and recognize that you guys have a path that you put a lot of time and effort into, and we recognize that and respect it. It's been the newest development that's put a real curveball in our development, and so we have to wait and see. I wish we could say that we're going to write a check tomorrow and it's ours, but we can't get into, we can't start that language, or we can't go into the contract with the language that satisfies both the city's need, our financing, and the owner. So.
Any other questions for Mr. Bauer? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Next person to testify is Jason Clifton.
Hello there. My name is Jason Clifton, 1220 Glacier Avenue. As you already know, I'm a member of the Cascade Development that currently holds a purchase agreement with the Barretts, which is legally binding until the expiration of later this week. As you're also aware, our team consists of a well-experienced hotel developer based in L.A. and her financier who brings investor backing to fund these large-scale projects that we've already proposed. Upon the successful proposal to the assembly of our mixed-use facility that would incorporate public parking in addition to, that was back on September 28th, we've steadily been working with city officials to outline the appropriate steps to take over ownership during the course of demolition. Unfortunately, the news of the property owners entering a second agreement has caused my team to suspend their efforts and pause to reflect on what type of dog and pony show we've kind of gotten ourselves into. The fact that Kathleen or Camilla Barrett can find it or can deem it feasible to enter into two binding agreements is a testament that the owners must uphold themselves above common law. With this in mind, I believe it is reasonable to speculate that this is yet another tactic employed by the owners to thwart the city's demolition efforts and avoid accountability for the dire state of their property, all the while stringing yet another developer along the way. Back when we, as business downtown business owners, we've grown frustrated with the stagnant condition of this property, so we pulled together our team to spur positive movement and an urban planning initiative this community desperately needs, and with every intention of bringing a world-class facility into fruition. Now, as a member of Cascade Development, I'm not here to request the CBGA to choose one developer's proposal over another. As we all understand, it comes down to who has the entitlement and rightful ownership of the property itself. I'm here to encourage you to continue forward with the demolition process, since there's serious question if the building is even salvageable. Not only will demolition resolve the ongoing nuisance, but it will provide a clean slate for future development that utilizes the property to its fullest potential. While Cascade Development has already illustrated the potential this lot has to address many more issues facing the city than just affordable housing, a housing development could come through and incorporate twice as many units as well as parking, with a cleared lot. But fortunately, there's already a lot going on that addresses housing right now, so it's time for the city to diversify their efforts and address other issues such as the parking crisis and encourage economic growth. And I believe this property has the ability to address all of these needs for the revitalization of downtown once it's raised.
Thank you, Mr. Clifton. Is there any questions for Mr. Clifton? Okay, we have one more person listed for public testimony. We're going to take that testimony, and then we'll take a five-minute break. Next person is Ross McDougall. Russ.
My name is Russ McDougall. I live at 3139 Wilmot Avenue. I've been a builder here in Juneau for about 40 years, since 1974. I've done a lot of remodel work. I basically specialize in residential remodel. I've always wondered what the potential of taking down that structure from the inside, leaving the concrete walls, would be. I've never been in the building, so I don't really understand the workings of that. But we've done a number of remodels where we basically gutted them to the point of what you're talking about doing. Maybe not quite to this extent, but I think that it could be rehabilitated and rebuilt without taking the structure down. I do agree with the Clifton Bauer group a little bit about how you know, maybe it could be a better use of the land there. But I think in the long run, I don't want to see it be another hit like we have on the corner of Front and Seward, like we've had for 10 years. So I believe in these guys and what they're proposing, and I hope they move forward. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. McDougall? Thank you very much. We'll take a 5-minute break and come back.
Oh, the prairie lights are burning bright. Chinook wind is moving in. Tomorrow night I'll be Alberta bound. Though I've done the best I could, my old luck ain't been so good. And tomorrow night I'll be Alberta bound. No one I met could ever forget the Rocky Mountain sunset. It's a pleasure just to be Alberta bound. I long to see my next of kin to know what kind of shape they're in. Tomorrow night I'll be Alberta bound. Alberta bound, Alberta bound. It's good to be Alberta bound. Alberta bound, Alberta bound. Good to be Alberta bound. Alberta bound, it's good to be Alberta bound. Alberta bound, Alberta bound, it's good to be Alberta bound. Oh, the skyline of Toronto is something you'll get on to, but they say you got to live there for a while. And if you got the money, you can get yourself a honey written guarantee to make you smile. But it's known in the city, and the streets are brown and gritty, and I know there's pretty girls all over town. But they never seem to find me, and the one I left behind me is the reason that I'll be Alberta bound. Alberta bound, Alberta bound. It's good to be Alberta bound. Alberta bound, Alberta bound. It's good to be Alberta bound. It's good to be Alberta bound.
And you're listening to KTOO in Juneau, Alaska, and it's been the live broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting. They're currently taking a short break. The weather for tonight calls for rain, lows around 36, southeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour, becoming light and variable late. Tomorrow, numerous rain showers, snow level 1,000 feet, highs around 39, southwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, rain showers likely and lows around 33. Veterans Day, rain showers likely, highs around 40. South wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Rain Wednesday night, lows around 36.
If you'd like to keep up with the variety of activities, people, and events in the capital city, you want to tune into a Juneau Afternoon. Find out about concerts, meetings, events, classes, and speakers that add vitality to our community. Get to know your fellow residents. Plan your schedule. Learn what's going on and how you can be involved. Or be a part of the program by being a guest and passing the word about what you're up to. A Juneau Afternoon, weekdays live at 3 on KTOO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available on demand via KTOO.org.
coming your way in the high time. The sugar can go in the high time. Living is slow in the high time. The mango is sweet, but the sits and pretty frog are over your feet. I was laying by the water in the morning sun, shaded by a coconut tree. When I turned around, it was all I could see. There was a great big centipede staring at me in Lahaina. The sugar can go in Lahaina. The living is slow in Lahaina. The mangoes are sweet, but the centipede crawls all over your feet. My leg. In Lahaina, the sugar can go in Lahaina. The living is so in Lahaina.
Cut off, Ms. Troll. I'd wanted a follow-up question earlier on. We're not having rebuttal testimony, but I will have her ask one question for clarification. Ms. Troll?
Thank you. And this is for PPP, Mr. Coogan, or whatever. I just in needing to understand why option C has to be that the property comes back to the city, that the city purchases the property. Why doesn't it at that point in time, as a developer who owns the property, put it out and try to develop either the high-end housing and the mixed use and the commercial, but now in a historic building?
Right.
So I'm just perplexed as to option C and whether or not this whole proposal hinges on the city being the buyer that steps up.
Yeah, that's a fair question. And this is Garth Schlimlein again. On a normal development project, like we talked about earlier, like the proposal, I guess it'd be option B, which would be the affordable housing component. But it could be affordable housing. It could be a hotel. It could be any number of normal development proposals. You would typically have a period of time to really drill down into the cost, the, you know, what.
Joining the meeting.
Oh.
Debbie White.
Okay. The question was why kind of turnkey to it, the city, as opposed to us keeping it and developing it and owning it. I think, is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah. And the reason is in trying to be responsive to your concerns from a timing standpoint, we didn't think we would be able to get our arms around this thing such that we would be comfortable pulling the trigger in any kind of regular development, whether it be housing, retail, a mixture of both, office, whatever, in this short period of time. If the goal is to save the building and the goal is to, you know, use your funds in a fashion that keeps the building and keeps your options open, we can do that in a 30-day period because we know we have an exit strategy, if you will. If we were to go forward in a normal development process, we would need more time to evaluate the pros and cons of obtaining the financing, raising the equity, what we're going to build, how much it's going to cost, and what the back end is. And you have, typically on a development project, you have your construction financing to build it, if you will, acquire and build it. Then you have takeout financing once you get it up and built and stabilized. And, you know, we can do that if we had 3 or 4 months. But I don't think from everything I hear here, there is 3 or 4 months to make that kind of timeline and also reach your objective to keep your options open with the demolition. And that's why we came up with this idea.
Thank you very much. So if I bring the matter back to the assembly, we have a direction already adopted. We have a contract let ready for notice to proceed. We delayed here for a bit to hear another proposal. My question to the members is there Is there a motion to amend our direction? Does anybody want to make a motion to change our direction at this point?
Can I ask a question, couple of questions first?
Ms. White, go ahead.
Okay, so you'll have to bear with me because I'm trying to imagine the people that are there. But did Tony Yorba, did he speak in favor of what Mr. Coogan was talking about? Was that him?
Yes.
Okay, but we had some opinions about the building being torn down, and one of those studies was done by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and his firm at that time said that it was not feasible to tear the building down. And that's one of my concerns. My second concern is this is, you know, it's not our building, and yes, we have a demolition order, but we have some conflicting agreements for who the new owner is going to be, and it's not up to me to decide what trumps what, but from what I remember, a purchase and sale agreement is stronger than a letter of intent. So we have that question, and frankly, I have some serious concerns about pulling away a concrete structure that's been holding the hillside up for 100 years. So I guess I just don't feel like I have enough information here because there's so much conflicting. You know, when Bauer Clifton had their proposal and it was the only one on the table, yes, we grasped at it, but now we've got somebody else coming in who may have a stronger real estate contract. And there's a lot of conflicting information going on here.
Yes, that's correct. And I question whether it's up to us at this point in time to parse that. That's why I pose the question to the assembly. Is there any will in the body? Does somebody want to express a motion that we should change our existing direction, which is to proceed with the demolition contract? Ms. Troll.
I guess I would move that we proceed with a limited notice to proceed with the demolition plan, 30 days. That would be my motion, and I could speak to it.
Please okay. Speak to it.
I guess, you know, somewhat for the reasons that Ms. White is just talking about, is that it's still really confusing who the owner is. And we have one agreement that's going to expire. It may not. I guess I think it's worthwhile to have the 30 days just to see how things settle out in terms of ownership and who are we working with. And the downside to us is possibly, you know, being out $50,000. But I want to work with whoever is the new owner. And I think we can, once we know who the new owner is, we can move forward and deal with these questions about, well, what is the best mix of use? I don't want to try and solve that yet. You know, I want things to proceed. So, and I want to work with the new owner. So I want 30 days to figure out who that new owner is, but I want to keep the pedal to the metal in terms of the fact that we still would be asking for the paper process of the demolition plan to continue.
Thank you. Is there any objection to the motion?
I object.
Yeah.
Mr. Jones, would you like to speak to your objection?
And I probably won't keep this. Maybe I'll keep it short. Maybe I won't. I'm just really tired of getting jerked around. I was one of the first voices 2 years ago to take the property, have the city own it. I've lost all those battles. Every time I've argued for that, I said in 2 years or 1 year or 6 months or whatever, we'll be in the same damn boat, and we are in the same boat. We have a property whose owner is jerking us around. And in deference to Ms. Troll, in 30 days, the owner will come up with some other contingency that they won't sell unless the city does something. The city doesn't do the demolition, whatever. We've had two proposals from private sector. None of them have the money. All of them want our 1.8. All of them either want the building down or they want it up, but they still want our 1.8. They don't own the property, and they want our 1.8. The people that own the property are jerking them around and us around. And as far as I'm concerned, we proceed with the demolition order. Whoever buys the property buys that demolition order. If we lose the 1.8 because it stays a hole in the ground, I guess that's the price we pay for our inaction 2 years ago, year and a half ago, year ago, 6 months ago. And if we delay, it's our responsibility for our inaction tonight. And I'm not going to support anything other than we move ahead, we give the notice to proceed. If somebody comes in and says, we're the new owner, and you know we accept this, we'll work with you, and we are the new owner. We've got the title. We've got the legal documents. The Barretts are no longer involved in this, and it passes the legal muster of our legal department. Maybe I'll rethink it. But right now, nobody owns that property but the Barretts. The Barretts have the responsibility to tear it down, and they failed to do it. We've set conditions that if they don't do it, we will. And that's all I'm willing to support tonight.
Ms. Crane.
Yeah, 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 I agree.
Mr. Keel.
Well, that was most of what I had to say, too. I would point out that there was a look at tax credit financing to make Gaston Apartments affordable housing development downtown. And AHFC took a look at it, and they sent their people in and took it to their board, and they backed away with their hands in the air. Now, I don't know that no one comes to the tax credits but through AHFC. That may not be true, but I don't think I've seen it in Alaska without them. And so I would be very reluctant to go through more of this without their expertise. I have a great deal of respect for the builders who are in the room. They have done good work on a number of things, and I don't question necessarily their statement that it can be done. But with really, really questionable economics, I am concerned that, as Mr. Jones said, we'll be right back here again. I am equally concerned that 30 days from now we'll have two more developer groups in here with binding legal purchase order agreements that they've negotiated in good faith. And like Mr. Jones, I have hit the point where I think to do right by the taxpayers, we have to move this thing forward. Every proposal so far has suggested that we spend taxpayers' money on this. We are prepared to do that. And I'm sorry that there hasn't been a wonderful opportunity that recoups all the taxpayers' investment in getting rid of this nuisance. But we're dealing with the owners we're dealing with, and the public good at this point, since, like Mr. Jones, we lost the opportunity to choose a redevelopment partner in with the city being the owner of the parcel, the opportunity at this point is to tear it down and unless somebody pays cash before we're done, sell it to the highest bidder.
Well, we have a motion before us. It's been objected to. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Can you repeat?
And the motion would be to extend the notice to proceed for 30 days. A limited notice to proceed for 30 days.
With a limited notice to proceed, allowing the contractor to put together a development plan, and there would be a 30-day limit on that.
Please call the roll.
Okay. Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Crane?
No.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Mayor Fitz?
No.
Motion failed.
So that leaves us again asking a question. Is there any proposal to change our current direction? Hearing none, the current direction to the manager stands.
Thank you.
This brings us to new business staff reports, adoption of the 2016 assembly calendar.
And I remind you to look at the one that was in your red folder that stated tonight. The change on that from what originally was posted is moving from the October 3rd meeting for Public Works, Facilities, Lands, and Assembly COW, moving that to October 10th instead of October 3rd. So that's the only change in the new calendar proposed for you for tonight.
Do I hear a proposal to adopt the amended calendar?
So moved.
Is there any objection?
I just wanted
clarification.
No, I wanted to ask for a change. One, I don't have the calendar in front of me. I think it was March 2nd or something. Anyway, there was one day, Ms. Crane, where there's a finance meeting that was sort of sticking out there all by itself.
We moved it from the 9th, which freed up that entire week, to the 2nd.
I didn't remember seeing it on the...
It is. It's on, been moved from the 9th.
All right. Thank you. I don't have the calendar.
So hearing no further objection, the calendar is adopted. Brings us to assembly reports. I'm going to waive my report tonight in the interest of the hour. Committee reports. Human resources. Lauren, are you ready?
Give me a second here and I will be. Thank you. The Human Resources Committee, as a committee of the whole, met this evening to consider appointments to Dr. Harbor's board. And the motion from the Human Resources Committee is to appoint Weston Eiler to a term effective immediately that will expire 6/30/2016, and this is filling an unexpired term of a member who had resigned. Thank you. That's all. Well, you need to ask if they agree.
And oh, well, okay. Sorry. Is there any objection to the appointment of Mr. Eiler? Okay.
All right. Then the regular meeting of the Human Resources Committee started at 6:15. We considered appointments for the Douglas Advisory Board. We had two seats available. The motion from the Human Resources Committee is that we appoint Arnold Liebolt and Michelle Morgan to terms expiring 9/30/2018.
Is there any objection to those recommendations? Hearing none, they're adopted.
The committee also examined appointment to the Juneau Human Rights Commission. The Human Rights Commission had two seats for terms expiring 5/31/2017 and one seat expiring 5/31/2016. We had one applicant. The Human Rights Commission was that applicant's third choice in terms of priority. One of those he's probably being interviewed for tomorrow with the Juneau Economic Development Council. And it was the desire of the committee to not take any action on appointments to the Human Rights Commission, to advertise, to try to recruit, and we've moved the next discussion to January of 2016 at our next meeting. We also considered the Local Emergency Planning Committee, and the motion from the Human Resources Committee is that Andrew Bogar be appointed to seat number 7 on the Local Emergency Planning Commission, and that is a seat held by the American Red Cross.
Everybody concur with that recommendation?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
We also considered the Utility Advisory Board appointment. We had one seat for an unexpired term that expires 5/31/2016. There were two motions. The first motion was that the Human Resources Committee would suspend our rules, and that passed. The next motion was that we appoint Brian Farrell to the Utility Advisory Board with a term to expire 5/31/2019. The original seat was to expire in May of 2016, we felt that this person could then move on to 2019. That's why the two motions. So,
joining the meeting.
So the motion. The motion is that Brian Farrell be appointed to a seat on the Utility Advisory Board for a term expiring 5/31/2019.
Is there any objection to the committee's recommendation?
Question.
Question.
So, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So that's a 3-year term plus 6 months, roughly? Is that what we're...
Roughly.
Okay.
But with advisory boards, we were told they all operate under the rules of procedure, and so we suspended those rules in order to make this appointment. We also considered that a possibility on one other appointment and opted not to do that because it was an enterprise board and it had a different set of rules. So.
Thank you. I have no objection.
Anything further?
Yes. We also, as the Assembly knows, we've had some work sessions. The Human Resources Committee over the last several months has been considering whether or not we should continue with the Social Services Advisory Board. Their duties were to develop the RFP and award the social services grants to the local community. And we have we had instructed the city manager to work with the Juneau Community Foundation to have a discussion about whether or not we would continue with the Social Services Advisory Board and whether or not we would move that money to the Juneau Community Foundation under a memorandum agreement on exactly how they would operate. We have gotten to the point now where we have a draft memorandum of agreement with the Juneau Community Foundation. We reviewed that tonight, and basically the committee's recommendation is that we continue, have the city manager continue with the negotiations. We made two or three changes, and that basically we would, within the next couple of months, have an agreement with the Juneau Community Foundation to operate the grants beginning July 1, 2016 for a 2-year period, would have an audit requirement, would make a couple other changes to the current process. For that, the Juneau Community Foundation would be paid $25,000 a year for the 2 years of the agreement to manage the grants and to work on working with their matching money for a position that will look at how the groups can get out of the silos and do a little bit better communicating. And what this would basically mean is the Juneau Community Foundation, with their HOPE grants and with ours, would have roughly about $2 million to award on that basis by combining that, would require them to report to us. So the motion from the Human Resources Committee is to have the city manager move forward with that and would bring back the final agreement back through the Finance Committee and then to the full Assembly. We wanted to make sure that we also gauging any concerns that the Assembly might have to continuing this process if you all agree with the direction that the Human Resources Committee has given to the city manager, then the next time it would come back through one of our other committees and we would move forward.
Thank you. Is there any objection to the motion from the committee or any questions for Ms. Crane?
There's no objection. I just wanted to state that I thought we were really, because of the timeline of being able to get the grants out, that we were looking for something much sooner than 2 months.
Well, I was looking at the end of December. So.
Yeah, as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think manager is looking perplexed over the issue of sending it back to the finance committee first.
And so it's your direction, but I thought what the motion was of HRC was to move it to the assembly for assembly to adopt the agreement so that we could move forward, because we are on a fairly tight timeline now trying to get the grant notices out to agencies that want to apply for these funds so that the Juneau Community Foundation can award them and bring back a recommended list of awards back to the Finance Committee in May on the work they did. I'm concerned that if we're into December, that's going to be very difficult for Juneau Community Foundation to be able to move it forward.
Well, a clarification, having sat in on the meeting, so you're suggesting that the draft be approved now, but there were things yet to be negotiated. So how would that work, and how would a final approval work for you?
I would recommend that you give me direction, which at the HRC, to put in not to limit the $50,000, to put in the audit piece, and to have them come back with their proposal of requested funding to the Finance Committee in May. Give me that direction, or I'll finalize the agreement. If I can't finalize it with that, then I will come back to you.
We also said at that meeting, that it should go through our legal review first before it comes back to us.
Well, what I hear the manager saying is it won't come back to us unless there's a problem. Are those amendments acceptable to you, Mr. Jones, as the chairman of the committee?
Yes.
They were discussed. Okay. So, as I understand it, then you'll work on the amendment. If you cannot negotiate the items that were stated by the committee, then you'll bring it back to us. Otherwise, you'll proceed.
Correct.
And that is everybody copacetic with that approach? Okay. No objection? Adopted. Thank you very much. Anything else in your report?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Finance.
Oh, we're not having another I'm sorry. We're not having another finance meeting until December.
Okay. Lance.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Troll kindly held the gavel for me at the Lands Committee while I was out of town. The discussions were briefly about the wetlands inventory, and more extensively about the stream mapping project that the city is doing with grant funds. There was some discussion about the possibility, under consideration of the CBJ taking over anadromous stream mapping duties from the Department of Fish and Game, and the committee had quite a number of questions about that. There will maybe some joint work,
joining the meeting.
Welcome back, Debbie.
There may be some joint work in the summer, but no motion toward assuming those duties. And then briefly from the Marijuana Policy Committee, under committee reports.
Okay.
thank you. The Marijuana Policy Committee, the Assembly acted on the letter to the State Marijuana Control Board tonight. Also had an initial discussion of questions of how CBJ might tax marijuana, and at our next meeting we'll get to have a much more extensive discussion of that. Hopefully we'll make a recommendation to the full assembly about the tax question. Marijuana Policy Committee also has begun in earnest discussion of a draft ordinance on some local rules for marijuana businesses beyond those by the state. and is involved in extensive discussion of the question of whether there ought to be a local license or whether our conditional use permit serves the purposes that the city will need. Committee is currently divided on that, and so you can look forward to a robust discussion going forward.
Okay, thank you very much. Liaison reports. Mr. Jones, anything from Planning Commission, JEDC, or DBA?
Several. JEDC board will meet tomorrow, beginning at noon for 2 hours. Part of that discussion will be to interview applicants for their board of directors. I believe there's 3 vacancies. They have 4 applicants. They will do that probably in executive session, and I will not sit in since those come before the assembly. There are some other issues, and then also JEDC at noon on Thursday will be making a presentation on their economic indicators to the chamber at the chamber lunch on Thursday out at the airport. The Downtown Business Association met last month. You also attended that meeting. They looked at their committee structure. They trying to get some issues around parking and some of the other things within their committee structure, trying to have a better way to communicate with us, a better way to communicate sort of some of their concerns and issues. I made them aware of the pasture fee projects. What I thought was the timeline, which ended up with the Gaston Apartments, but a few other things. Their next meeting is actually Thursday morning at 8:30. I forget where, but I think it might be at the Red Dog again. The Planning Commission, their committee of the whole met 2 weeks ago. They were reviewing the land management plan. I think they met for almost 2 hours. With Mr. Cheney and to talk about the various things within the land management plan. That is coming back before the full planning commission tomorrow at their meeting tomorrow night. And also they're having also talking about the wetlands management plan. And then as we had a discussion with Mr. McDougall related around the housing plan. We talked about that as well. Also tomorrow at the Planning Commission, they will be, I think it's actually on the consent agenda, is the city's project to make the changes in water sewer lines, those kinds of things on Whittier Street. But I would also remind people that there is a public meeting on the Whittier Street improvements at KTO on the 12th, starting at 6 o'clock. And that is a public meeting on the Whittier project, but it is before the Planning Commission tomorrow night at their meeting. And I have not attended the last several meetings of the Aquatics Board, which I had initially, hoping that I could sort of keep up with their starting to look at all the things they need to look at as an enterprise board, but I have not been able to make the last several meetings, haven't seen the reports, and I'm hoping that as the you as the mayor look at that being an enterprise board, we really do need to have a formal liaison to that particular group. And with that, that's...
Are you volunteering?
I guess I could volunteer. It is sort of a creature of my making. I've also mentioned to you, probably haven't mentioned to Maria, but since she is a liaison to the PRAC and they share a director and a bunch of other stuff, that was also a choice to think about. That's between you and her. But if it comes down to me, I'll be more than happy to do it. But they have been meeting on Tuesday nights, which conflicts with the Planning Commission for me. So, okay.
Ms. Troll, anything from JCOS or Affordable Housing Commission?
Yes, but with your indulgence, Mr. Mayor, I would like to ask a quick question regarding the Downtown Business Association. At one of our committee of the whole's work sessions on downtown planning, The notion of changing from the 2-hour to a 90-minute parking, we wanted to get feedback from the Downtown Business Association, and I hope that that get on their agenda sometime soon.
I presented that to them several meetings ago, and it's been part of their ongoing struggling trying to get their committees together. They're at the end of the tour season, so their attendance is going up in terms of not having the time, and the mayor may have another option. But one of the things we did talk about that I also presented to them was the idea that in the parking management plan I talked about, you want to monetize your most valuable parking. So the idea was maybe we should monetize the on-street parking, and if we have 2-hour free, maybe it should be in a parking structure. And again, that's all part of their kind of discussion that they need to have, and they have not gotten their committees together.
Actually, DBA is actually going out probably early next week with a survey that they've coordinated with Sky Steckel at engineering on parking questions to their membership. So hopefully we'll get some feedback from them.
Okay, thank you.
Pretty soon. And those questions will be raised.
Okay. So. Moving on to my liaison reports then. The Affordable Housing Commission met November 3rd. You heard Mr. Duell speak about the Housing Action Plan and the fact that the Housing Commission is pushing for some additions and improvements to the existing plan. They talked a bit about the tax credit development, and that was on our consent agenda, and they certainly support that effort, and we'll probably hear from them when it comes up for public hearing. The commission, Tunic Commission on Sustainability, is meeting tonight, and I obviously was not there.
Okay. Ms. Gladyszewski, Parks and Rec, emergency planning.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The local emergency planning commission has not met since we last met, and in fact, they're not meeting this month. Their regular meeting was on Veterans Day, so they'll next meet on December 9th. Parks and Rec Advisory Committee met on the 3rd and talked about a little bit about a proposal for the Cax Trail, which is someone was suggesting to do some commercial uses on that trail. They understand that that's not allowed, so they were just that was sort of their first discussion whether or not they wanted to take that any further and make any recommendations, but they're still talking about that. Their fees and charges subcommittee actually meets tomorrow, so they're going through all the fees and for the whole all the facilities, and they next meet on the December 1st.
Thank you. Ms. Crane Bartlett? And
there's nothing that can't wait until our next meeting.
Okay. Mr. Keel, do you have anything on AML, University, UAS, or school district for us tonight?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Campus Council had its meeting this past Tuesday. I was out of town, but it was a good briefing by the Chancellor on UAS's role in the economy, both Juneau and our region. There was significant discussion at the upcoming Board of Regents meeting and what sort of tuition changes they were considering. The school board meets tomorrow night, and I very much look forward to sneezing through their meeting as well.
Thank you very much. Ms. White, anything to report from the Airport Board or JCVB?
Well, you have everybody's committees memorized. I'm impressed.
I have a list in front of me. It makes it easier.
Oh, that's cheating. So you just lost some cred there. Anyway, let's see, Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau. Liz and Jesse went to this big convention called IMEX, International Incentive Travel Meeting Events type of group, and came back with 4 strong leads. Things coming up in Juneau soon. University of Alaska Fairbanks has a meeting about invasive species that'll go from October 25th to the 30th. I guess that's done. They just had one for called Sharing Our Knowledge that was from the 28th to the 1st. And don't forget, coming up is Public Market from the 27th to the 29th. on the airport board. I did a meeting at a, report on their last meeting at or at our last meeting, and they have their next meeting tomorrow night, 6 p.m. at the Alaska Room, and I'm probably not going to call into that one. I think I've pretty much maxed out my international plan tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Becker, Southeast Conference or Chamber, Alaska Committee?
I'll start out with my committee report, Committee of the Whole.
Okay.
Okay. We met and discussed the Alaska the housing plan. We heard from the consultant who told us all the things we need to do to improve housing. We talked about the airport master plan was shared. The marijuana proposal that we voted on tonight was a public hearing on that, so we had quite a few people who had something to say. The Ocean Interpretive Center, there's a report from the people who are working on that. We decided to give the community block grant to the Housing First, because I want to say affordable housing, Housing First, and we talked about the Seawalk bid update. And then as far as liaison reports, the Alaska Committee's meeting Wednesday morning. I've been going to the DIG meetings, Downtown Improvement Group, which is it's different than the Downtown Business Association, but there are still business people who go to it, and they're focusing a lot on how to improve downtown as far as the looks and the way things are handled. It's a really good meeting. And Chamber of Commerce every week. I did go and give a report to the board last week. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Who does this bring us to? Mr. Keel, you had one thing to add?
I apologize. I forgot, and Ms. Crane sitting next to me reminded me, we do have our joint meeting of the Assembly and the School Board this coming Wednesday afternoon. Plenty of time for everyone to attend Veterans Day observances, but then 2 p.m., I believe, and you should have agendas on your desk tonight.
Thank you. Do you have something to add, Ms. Clark?
No, thank you,
same.
Mr. Chairman.
I'd just like to add one thing. I have attended a couple of Southeast Conference's Transportation Committee meetings on the ferry system and the urgency surrounding that, and got a very, pretty inspiring ending of discussion on the first meeting from Lieutenant Governor Malott. There was quite a bit of interest in looking at the short-term issues that are facing the legislature this year, but there's also sort of broke up into two groups. There's also a second group trying to address longer-term issues, governance and that sort of thing. So it's pretty interesting. Hopefully there'll be some hardcore recommendations coming out from that group before too long to go to the legislature and also, to our fellow communities in Southeast and elsewhere. That's all I had. Presiding officer reports, I assume there's none. Are there further assembly comments or questions about anything? Oh, my goodness. Okay, Ms. Crane.
I'll be very brief. I just wanted to say there was a very good official opening of the Mendenhall Valley Library on Saturday. Staff there did an excellent job for the opening. It was extraordinarily well attended. I was sorry that the newspaper didn't cover it. But it went very well. Lots of positive comments.
Really impressive building, too. Ms. Troll?
Yeah, I have some comments.
Yes.
And my first, actually I have two action items, and then I'll be real quick, as quick as I can here. The first thing is I would like to ask the city manager to develop a resolution of conceptual support for the Juneau Ocean Center. And to bring that back before us. My intent here is that it be at the 30,000-foot level. We don't really get into the details of the particulars of the proposal, but to lend support to their efforts because it will help in their fundraising. It will help in their rapport with the Alaska Mental Health Lands Trust. And we'll be able to see the particulars of that resolution when it comes back to us. But it would be my request to ask staff to prepare a resolution of conceptual support.
Is that direction good with everybody? I think you can do that. Okay. Did you add another item?
Yeah, the other action item. We're all aware of reading, and we know about the heroin deaths that have occurred in our community. And there's been some talk about Senate Bill 23, which helps make Narcan available. Our current fire department uses it. I would like to see the city manager work with the police department in trying to figure out a way for us to support that action. And, you know, there might be appropriate protocols we put in, but I think it's important for us as a community to step up and do what we can on this problem. So that's a letter that would come back to us.
Yes.
For clarification, so is that a letter that you want to go to our delegation to support SB 23? Is that what you're looking for?
That's my intent.
Okay. Thank you.
But want you to work with the police department and getting their wording right.
Yes.
Okay.
Right, and then those were my actions, and I have two comments.
Okay.
Which is, I want to give a shout out and an attagirl to our city attorney for the APARC decision, winning the summary judgment was evidently a rare legal victory, and thank you for that. Hopefully, we can move on into the bankruptcy, the next step. So. That took a little bit of tenacious work in our staff, and I really appreciate that. And I think it's great that the Teacher of the Year is from Juneau. And I think we're all appreciative and want to extend a congratulations to extended learning teacher Amy Jo Miners. That's all, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Since I have, I guess I was the presiding officer over the appeal on Landscape Alaska. And we've had a lot of discussion here as this has proceeded through us that the neighborhood failed to understand the difference between what was appealable and what are enforcement actions related to the conditional use permit on various other things. The neighborhood group continued to go to court. A couple weeks ago, I think we got the court final decree that basically said our actions were justifiable in terms of what we did as an assembly through the appeal. I think people were, one, relieved, and two, I think maybe a little bit overjoyous about winning that court case. And we, as was presented tonight, have sort of ignored the ongoing issues of those neighbors about the fact that owners have not complied with a lot of the conditional uses that were put forward. And I know it's at this point between the Planning Commission, what I've heard from staff, and what I've got here is a bunch of you said, she said, he said, they said, this said, I've done this, nobody's done this. And I guess I would like some final review of this document and some kind of a report that says CDD's done everything they can do, and here's the documented that we've been out there, we've done this, we've done that, or no, we haven't because of, or no, we haven't, or this is our enforcement action. I would like some kind of, I guess, debatable closure that takes whatever CDD says they've done, whatever the Baumgartners say they haven't done, and somebody to review what the truth is. Because this has gone on for years, and the neighborhood out there is not very happy, and we continue to get this, and
I'm just not very satisfied with the outcome of all of this process. So that's my request to the manager. I would like to see something as expeditiously as we can get it.
Can we get a report at the next regular meeting from CDD that documents this litany of complaints?
We should be able to get something by the next assembly meeting.
I don't know about documenting a litany of complaints. I would like to see a side-by-side. I sent this email. I asked them to do this. Did they do it? What was the result? Just down the pike, because, you know, they said, well, we called up, and they said they were going to do it, and then nobody goes out there. So I'm getting a little bit upset about that this continues to go on with no apparent resolution, and I think some people have just done too much to put it on the owners just not liking their neighbor. And I don't think that's all the truth. And so
that's hopefully what we'll get in the report.
I hope so.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Becker.
Oh, thank you. Well, this is, I'm not sure you all can tell what it is. Can you tell what this is? My granddaughter made this for me. Do you know what it is?
Origami, right?
So. Yes, it's made of origami. Do you know what animal it is?
A moose.
I'll give you a hint.
Oh, a bunny.
Frogs.
Yes. And she made this for me because she wanted me.
The bunny.
This is Fluffy the rabbit. Oh. Whatever. She wanted me to bring up the fact that it is a serious problem in our town that we have these bunny rabbits that are all over the place. And she said, I'm serious. No. She said, Grandma, would you bring this to the assembly and ask them to fix the problem? And she gave this to me so I wouldn't forget to bring it up. I don't know if it's our problem. I don't know if it's something we can do. But seriously, it is a problem, and it might get worse. So I guess I would like to know if there's something we can do. And if you would like me to give this to you so you don't forget, I will. If there's something we can do, maybe it would be nice to find out what it is. And
get tramps.
And it's sounds like it's a problem.
And hand them over.
Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Glavchevsky.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had two things. One of them was the CUP issue and more generically about enforcing conditional use permits. I know it's an ongoing issue. It has been for a long time. We had one in person, and it wasn't adequate. Now we have zero people, and zero is even less adequate than one. And residents shouldn't have to go through this much trouble to get, to petition their government in this, this detailed. So I look forward to hearing exactly the back and forth on this. And the other thing people have asked, I have been asked, and I don't know the answer to, given the incident in Sitka with the use of a taser and use of force, and what are the procedures for our police department regarding use of force? How is that reviewed? Just a general at some point, maybe on a COW or just a memo or a... I'd like to know what we do.
I can tell you, I'm sorry, may I?
Go ahead.
I can tell you that the chief recently drafted an updated use of force policy that's in my office for review. And that happens, he regularly reviews their standard operating procedures. They're sent to me for review and comment, and then I send them back for adoption. But if you want more information as to how he comes up with the ideas that he puts in the policies, I leave it to the manager to have that discussion with him.
Yes, I would, and how often it happens, and just a general report on.
I will add it as long as the COW chair agrees to a future COW.
But we also, unlike Sitka, we don't have, when our officers book somebody, they go into the state correctional facility, correct? We don't have a jail like they have in Sitka. So we don't hold people under arrest once they've been arrested. They go to the state facility. So there's a little different circumstance, but.
Not now, just some point.
Yes.
Thank you.
So I don't believe there's any continuation of public participation on non-agenda items. Don't see any call for that. No executive session.
Thanks.
Brings us to the last item. Do you have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Any objection?
We're adjourned. Thank goodness.
That's true.